were not aware that there's no projector in the room. So they had to go and come in sausage. So apologies for that.
We have three entities in front of us today that we're interacting with. So we're going to take those entities. We're going to start with Centec, then come with USASA, and then EMISA at the end. That's how we're going to deal with them. We'll take the presentations and then interact with the presentations. I have apologies for today, members. Honorable Suwela, who's on Portfolio Committee on Higher Education Oversight Activity, the Minister, the Acting DG, and the Deputy Minister. Those are the apologies that I've got for today. Honorable Killian, I've got even Honorable Maseko, who's writing exams. Honorable Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to say that I was also supposed to go to the Higher Education Oversight. I have decided to prioritize this because it is an important BRRR process. But I just want to ask that you will understand that I will, in the course of the afternoon, have to leave to catch a flight to join the Higher Education Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and that is noted. I think later today we'll deal with what needs to happen from the issue of DOTSEDNA, and then as well as the process of the report, because we need to have our report adopted by next week. So just to outline how we're going to deal with the report, how it's going to be compiled, circulated. Much pressure to the team so that members have it in time to comment and send it back so that we can incorporate all the comments and be ready for adoption by Tuesday. So, but that will deal with it towards the end of the meeting today. Let me welcome the team from Centec led by Chairperson Melno. I will hand over to the chair to do opening remarks, and then the team can just take straight to the presentation, and then we'll interact with that presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Honorable Members and I suppose to colleagues, to the Deputy DG and other members of the department, and to colleagues from the other entities. Honourable members, you will find in the annual report that what we're presenting here is a company that is still fairly sustainable. The company is still generating positive cash. The asset base of Centec are still growing, and we still continue to deliver in our mandate. From a governance perspective, the company is still getting a clean audit in the fourth successive year, and the revenue is still increasing. The company has a 7% increase in revenue. We did have a shortfall in terms of meeting our budget. There was a 2% shortfall in our budget. However, the profits, we were able to grow the profits. There is some difficulties ahead and that we experience in terms of the delays in the digital migration, and that has a bearing in terms of the cost of maintaining the two parallel infrastructure. And of course, in the medium to long term, the other challenge is that we are running two networks where both of them would at some point, we would need to refresh the analog network, which we were hoping to retire, and also some of the early equipment that was introduced in the DTT network. The Fed early equipment was in the before 2010, 2009, which is now beginning to approach the end of life. So in essence, we're going to be forced to possibly refresh a network that will be retired, and also extend the life or essentially refresh a network that never really contributed to the generating of revenue. But the company still is looking at other means. We're still focusing on innovation to find new revenue sources, and part of that is looking at diversifying and also managing the forex exposure, because the cost of satellite communication is a significant cost to Zentech, and there is something. So we're looking at international markets, both to diversify the revenue streams, but also to look at new opportunities for growth. Because without new broadcasters coming on stream, the opportunities for growth within our borders will remain a challenge unless we get new products and new capital investment. So we are looking, and management are working very hard to find alternative revenue streams. Honourable members, I will now hand over to the CEO, Mr. Mlamliboy, to continue. Yeah. But before I do that, maybe if I can introduce, because we also, yes, I must introduce the new chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Seth Hadebe, who was appointed in the AGM of Zentech. I think it was in August. Mr. Hadebe has been a board member since last year. He has served in the Audit and Risk Committee, but he will now be chairing that and succeeding Ms. Mbele, who was the chairperson of the committee. But I will give the team an opportunity to introduce themselves as well.
Honourable Chairperson, and honourable members of the committee, colleagues, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee Zentech's annual report and annual performance plans for the year ending March 2016. With me today is a team of colleagues from Zentech, the company secretary, Fes Rafa, and the acting CFO, Mr. Aubrey, on my left-hand side, Nekubembe, and Mr. Kangi Matabane, the Chief Operating Officer. Chairperson, we present to you a report during a year that has been a difficult year for us. The market conditions that we have been facing in the last financial year have been very difficult to navigate. It's been a year that is full of volatility in the market, both local and international markets. However, we've managed to navigate ourselves through those difficult situations and come up with results which we believe, under the circumstances, we can say we are proud of. And all thanks to the governing body of Zentech, the board, and to the team of executives and the staff of Zentech. Our presentation will cover seven areas, Chairperson, just a brief review of our strategy, performance against our shareholder compact, financial overview, and network performance, and value creation governance, and then I'll conclude. We decided that our business moving forward into the future can be characterized into three categories. That is, one, the area of content distribution, which is digital content distribution, which covers various aspects, which is television, radio, OTT, and DTH, and also some consulting services based on what other customers or other entities are requiring of us, both local and international. We've had a few approaches that we've been dealing with in the last financial year. And the second area that we have as our business model is the area of managed infrastructure services, which looks at facilities leasing and also third-party infrastructure leasing or management for third-party customers. And the third component, or the third leg of our business model, is connectivity, which looks at wireless broadband, maritime services, smart city, and public safety. and also there we provide some advisory services. That was the target in the financial year. The Centec board, therefore, reviewed the strategy previously, in the previous financial year, and came up with this structure that says to us, let us look at the business broadly and not focus only on what has been our cash cow in the previous years. For us to be able to drive this strategy, the board reviewed the organizational structure of Centec during the financial year to ensure that it is aligned to the new business operating model and to ensure that the critical skills and capabilities are included in the correct structure of the business. The revised organizational structure has resulted in a merger of our IT and technology divisions, who's currently and now headed by one executive, the CTO. To drive Centec's BBBE-related activities, a new focus has been placed under the socioeconomic and enterprise development, and this is driven by our strategy department. We are quite aware that in every area of our business, chairperson and committee members, there are other strategic risks which we need to be aware of. And we can never eliminate risk, but we have to learn to mitigate those risks and manage them so that we can be successful in our business. The 12 top risks were listed in our corporate plan for 2016 financial year, and mitigating controls were implemented for all these risks. Some of them are still relevant going forward because we have not eliminated them, because we had identified them for the medium-term expenditure framework, and you will see these being available in our corporate plan in the years moving forward. But we have got plans to mitigate against this risk. In the year ahead, Centec will continue to embed all the risk management within the business processes and day-to-day activities to create a culture of managing risks, to ensure that the company's mandate and objectives are achieved and that shareholder value is not eroded. In terms of our performance against our plans, Jefferson, we're happy to present to you that we've managed to achieve 82% of our target in the last financial year, as opposed to the targeted 100% that we had put our eyes on, but unfortunately we did not achieve the 100%. We had 17 KPIs set out in the financial year 2016. And of these, for the year 31st March 2016, we had only 14, or not only, but we had 14 KPIs that were achieved out of the 17. The reasons for non-achievement, we will stipulate them in the next slide. As we go through the details of our performance against the compact, we had strategic objectives and goals that we had set for ourselves in the last financial year. The one strategic goal, the first one, is to ensure that the ICT infrastructure is accessible, robust and reliable, affordable and secure to meet the needs of the country and the people at large. Based on this, we set ourselves strategic objectives, which are to ensure that universal access to connectivity network services is achieved, and also to ensure secure and reliable internal ICT infrastructure and services, and thirdly, to ensure universal access to digital broadcasting signal distribution network services. We set ourselves some targets in this respect, Jefferson. First of all, on the area of delivering on connectivity, we set a target of 300 terminals to be installed, and a smart city target was one smart city services provided to our customer. And on the area of ensuring reliable network, we set ourselves a target of achieving concrete plans for disaster recovery or business continuity management. And also in the area of ensuring universal access to digital broadcasting services, we set ourselves targets for increased number of terrestrial sites to be completed in the last financial year. Specific targets for these goals, Jefferson, we set on the number of data connectivities, on the number of digital terrestrial sites, we'll increase them by 4. And on the number of FM services to be implemented, we said we'll increase our connectivity or our coverage by 33 radio community radio broadcasters to be provisioned by Centec, and also 31 transmitters to be provided for the SABC to expand the FM network. In terms of achievement on all these, we did not manage to achieve the 300 terminals connectivity due to the fact that our technology, VSAT technology that we've been using, had reached the end of life, and therefore we decided that we were not going to be able in the financial year to achieve this, and therefore we had set ourselves new targets to make sure that that network is refreshed. The smart city was achieved, and the business continuity plan was achieved and approved by the board. The greenfields, four greenfields that we had targeted for ourselves, we did not achieve all four, but only two. And the reason being that we're delayed by the unrest in the communities that we were installing those sites, or those transmitter sites. And that was well outside of our control. Beaconsfield, for instance, they had many demands which we could not meet, which were outside of Centec's purview, and therefore we did not manage to finish that site in the last financial year, but we will be completing it in this financial year. The community broadcasters and the SABC targets were achieved, Jefferson, and we're happy to announce that SABC coverage is being increased. Second strategic goal, which is to ensure high level of customer and stakeholder satisfaction by meeting the needs at all times, needs of our customers and shareholders. We have a goal there that says we need to ensure network availability that meets SLA requirements across all platforms. And we set ourselves a weighted average availability of 9.8. Of this, we achieved 99.8, that was the targeted weighted average availability. We achieved 99.89, which is 0.09% or percentage point above the target that we had set ourselves. On the improvement of customer and stakeholder satisfaction, we achieved 72% compared to the target that we had set of 69%. This target has been achieved based on stakeholder initiatives, including customer interaction, workshops, and meetings conducted during the financial year. The third strategic goal, Chairperson and members, is to drive organizational performance in order to improve organizational effectiveness. Excuse me. This we can achieve without managing our people properly. Therefore, we decided that the best objective for us to set our eyes on is to have effective management of talent and set ourselves a cover ratio, which means if one staff member is not around, how well can we continue doing our business. We set 25% cover ratio for succession, but in this case we achieved 47%. We achieved this due to the additional number of positions that we had introduced in the company in the area of scarce skills to cover the succession plans that we require to have within the business. The second objective under the strategic goal is to redesign and align an organizational structure that is to renew, or rather to make sure that the new operating model is achieved or is implemented. So we had set ourselves the target to develop an organizational development project that will assist us in developing a plan that will align our structure to our strategy so that we can achieve our strategic objectives. So we had set ourselves a target to achieve a restructure at the top level of the company, and this was achieved on time, and the board approved the structure in the financial year. The third strategic strategic goal was to drive organizational performance in order to improve effectiveness. And this speaks to effective management of talent and effective review of our the performance of our staff members within the organization. And we set ourselves a target to make sure that all the non-bargaining unit or management level, we have performance contracts signed and reviewed, and also that the bargaining unit, which is our unionized level of the organization, all the performance and contracts are signed. Unfortunately, in the last financial year, we did not achieve the signing of the contracts with the workers because of their demand for 13th check and so on and so forth, which took about 6 months to resolve. But eventually we managed to resolve it, but that got resolved only 2 months after the end of the financial year, and therefore we missed the target to get all our employees to sign performance contracts. But I'm happy to announce that today, Chairperson, the issue has been resolved. We are in a better position than we were at the beginning of the last financial year. Lastly, on the fourth strategic goal, we want to ensure that the company is financially sustainable. So we first of all said we needed to implement a foundation or a strategy that says let's make a contribution to our society in terms of our CSI. And we set ourselves a target of spending 2% of net profit after tax. And this is based largely on the stipulations of the BBBEE code. But we achieved 4.33% of spend. 4.33% of the net profit after tax was spent on social investments. Also, to develop and implement supplier development strategies. In this case, we had the target of 3% to be spent on net profit after tax, and we achieved 4% spend on our enterprise development and supplier development objectives. We also targeted to achieve an 8% of our return on net asset from continuing operations, and this we beat it by 3.2 percentage points, so we were at 11.27. Also, we had a target of earning before income tax of 195.7 million, and we achieved 196.26%. This was due to efficient management of our operations and also managing our cash flows and increase our business development. The end result is that we received an unqualified audit opinion, which is called clean audit, and we are happy to present that to the committee today. In terms of the productivity or the performance of our network and products, Centec delivered overall weighted average network availability of 99.89 against 99.8, as I've said in the previous slides. All products, with exception of medium wave and short wave, performed above target. Medium wave performed below target, and VSAT performed below target. And I think, as I've mentioned, VSAT performance was impacted by the end-of-life problems of our VSAT hub, which is being improved now. I think the next financial year will be reporting better results. Moving on to the financial performance of the organization, our revenue increased by 7% from 1.1 to 1.2 billion rand. Profit decreased by 3%, and this change on the profit decrease was contributed to by a number of factors, one of which is the fluctuation in the exchange rate. We have got two major costs which we have in our books, which is the human resources cost and the cost of leasing of satellite. The fluctuation in foreign currency affects our business largely because we lease our satellites in dollars. So therefore, that eats into our profit. EBIT was increased from 169 in the previous year to 196 in the current year. That's a 16% increase in EBIT. Total assets increase of 18%. Total liability decrease of 29%, and cash flow from operating activities increased by 23%, and capital expenditure also increased by 8%. And overall, Jefferson, we are happy to announce that the company's solvency is and liquidity is quite healthy. Solvency ratio of 6.7 is quite a healthy solvency ratio. It's been an improvement from the previous financial year. In terms of the highlights of our performance, revenue growth was limited to traditional streams, which is television and radio. Those are the main revenue contributors to our business at Centec, and that the television contribution is not only terrestrial television, but it is also the contribution of direct-to-home services which we provide to our customers. The challenges we've had on the highlight side is the VSAT business, which impacted our profitability. And secondly, it is the dual illumination funding, which was reduced in the last financial year. And the impact of reduced funding for dual illumination is that we have to, from our coffers, Jefferson, pay for the cost of running the digital network, from which we derive no revenue at the moment. So we've achieved a reduction in our overhead cost of 23%, and as I've mentioned before, our earning before income tax has increased by 15%. Margins are under pressure due to forex exposure, and the overall positive financial performance is what we can say it is due to prudent management of our finances within Centec, and thanks to the team that is helping us to manage that. In terms of the financial performance against budget, Jefferson, I think I'm going to skip this slide because I've spoken through it on the detailed slide. So let me move on to the next one, which is the highlights on the percentage revenue contribution from different aspects of our business. Television, there was a slight drop on television contribution from what it was last year, which was 48%. Down to 47% of our revenue. Radio, it remained the same at 26% of our total revenue. DTH grew by 3% to almost 40 million in the last financial year. We continue, therefore, to find ways and means to diversify our revenue so that we can remain sustainable into the future. We also present the revenue growth pictorially, and I think it just indicates that we've grown from 1.1 billion to 1.2 billion in the financial year 2016. From a cash flow perspective, cash flow from operations underperformed. There was high inventory levels and settlement of creditors within 30 days. I think we try by all means, Jefferson, to settle our creditors within 30 days because that is the law. And also we attempt and we always succeed to settle the creditors, which is the small businesses, within 15 days. Our EBIT, we have got EBIT, which is basically 82% of EBIT was converted into cash, so which means we've got real cash on hand. Which is our profit from our operations in the last financial year. Moving on to what we call the six capitals share, which is really a summary of the performance of our business. The financial capital is, if you look at the inputs into our financial performance, we have approved financial or finance department policies, and we generated cash from operations of 96 million. We appointed skilled and competent management staff members, and also are improving our operations in terms of our SAP blueprint. And that has resulted into us, in terms of the outputs, complying to the PFMA and Treasury regulations. And as I've said, the suppliers being paid within 30 days. And we also said that we need to be focusing on the contribution to community development, and therefore our ESD spend was 8 million, which is above the target. We contributed about 40 million to the fiscus in terms of tax, and as I've said, solvency ratio indicates that we are a healthy organization to date. The outcomes of this is really our accountability. We are accountable and caring corporate citizens, and we have reliable and accurate information available for key decision makers, and Centec will continue as a going concern. That is the financial position. In terms of the manufactured capital, we have capital expenditure. We had capital expenditure of 116 million, and the total business expenditure of 983 million as inputs into our manufactured capital. The outputs were that we managed to get average availability of 99.89 and produced an EBIT of 196 million and a RONA of 11.27, with the population coverage of about 88%, geographic coverage, population coverage of 87% and geographic coverage of 61%, and the rest of the coverage is covered by satellite. We have, I think the outcomes of this is that our customers are satisfied, and the evidence is shown by the performance of 72% as opposed to the target at 69%. We continue to improve our geographic coverage so that we can make sure that all both radio and television are covered nationally. Socially, the board has got a committee that is overseeing our social and ethics. We have also contributed by sponsoring some SMEs and appointed ESD specialists to help us drive enterprise and supply development. And also SCM policies were put in place to support SMEs and ESD. And the outcome of that, or the outputs rather, are the continuous and meaningful stakeholder engagement, compliance with the King report in terms of governance, and the development of stakeholder and management strategy, and an improved BBBE from a level 5 to a level 3 in this last financial year. The outcomes of this chairperson and committee members is that we have got skills development training resulting in community upliftment and accountability and carrying corporate citizen, that is Centec, for you today, and the development of SMEs and assistance of these SMEs in job creation. We can't do anything without our human capital, therefore we focus on talent management, skills development, and training our people in different areas in management and technical expertise. And the outcome of what we've done in terms of this management of skills and talent is that we have a new organizational structure for the top layer, and 100% of all our staff members have signed the performance contracts in the previous year, but obviously the reviews were not 100%, and we've achieved 80% training of our training plan. The result of this is a healthy and we believe satisfied employees, but it is not 100% that we must say. The right employees are within the right structure, and the skills that we require for our business are in place. But we continue to search and to develop new skills because there is shortage of digital skills. And I think because our business is evolving from analog to digital, so we have to continue developing new skills on the digital competency. In terms of intellectual capital, we continue to we seek to be an innovative company, chairperson and committee members. So our inputs on the intellectual capital is innovation and digital product roadmap. So what we did in the previous year, we developed a smart city solution, which was mainly delivering content for smart city projects within the Johannesburg metropolitan area. The other area was the hybrid broadcasting platform, which we developed in the last financial year, and also completed trials on DAB+, DRM, and L-band. The outcome of this is the enhanced product offering to customers, including products and consulting services. So this is what is going to drive our business moving forward, the innovation and creativity of what we do as a business. In terms of our environmental responsiveness as a corporate citizen, our natural capital looks at the inputs, which is the environmental policy, which we currently have at Centec, and we have appointed service providers to dispose of the waste that we generate at times when we refresh our technology, and they assure us that the way they dispose the waste is in accordance to the law. The outcome of that is the compliance with the King Tree Report and the principles of corporate governance, and also the electricity cost in line with inflation increases. There's no control that we can put in place for the increase in electricity costs, but that's just the nature of the environment we're operating in. The outcomes are the reduced impact of the on the environment by reducing carbon emission and reduction in environmental damage by way of adequate disposal of hazardous waste. So those are the six capitals that are driving our business in terms of our integrated reporting. Moving on, Chairperson, getting closer to our conclusion, a very important aspect of our business is the governance structure, which is really keeping us focused on what we're supposed to do in terms of our mandate. The board ensures shareholder value creation within a framework of prudent and effective controls, which enables risk to be assessed and managed to ensure long-term sustainability and development of our business, and also to stimulate growth within our business. The board has the ultimate responsibility and accountability for the performance and affairs of the company, and bears the responsibility for ensuring that the company adheres to high standards of ethical behavior. Board committees provide oversight and guidance. To this end, the board has established 5 committees during the financial year. We have got the Audit and Risk Committee, Social and Ethics Committee, Technology Policy and Regulatory Committee, and Human Resource Nominations and Remuneration Committees, and the DTT Ad Hoc Committee, which is focusing on making sure that we are ready for analog switch off. In terms of the future outlook, Chairperson and committee, the market is changing. The delivery of content is changing from what was before. And this is putting a lot of pressure on us as the traditional signal distribution company. And therefore, we don't see ourselves as a signal distributor, but we see ourselves as a platform operator to deliver digital content to all our customers, both locally and abroad. The introduction of broadband video on demand and video streaming services puts pressure on all our broadcasters to be creative and to try and develop other means of delivering content so that as a broadcaster or broadcasters, which are our customers, are not lagging behind in terms of the technology which is used for delivery of content to its consumers. We at Centec, therefore, we have put in place platforms for providing for our broadcasting customers video on demand services. We do want to emphasize that we are not a retail service provider, but we are providing to the broadcasters, not to the end user. So that video on demand platform that we're creating there is to add value to our broadcasters in the event that they need those services from us. The DTT platform offers multiple channel opportunities for broadcasting market, and that creates an opportunity for broadening the scope and diversity within the sector. Challenges of unavailability of STBs in the market will delay the analog switch off. And this is one of the risk factors share in our business, and we are obviously we have mentioned this a few times with our shareholder and our sister organizations on how we can improve in the delivery of boxes into the market. The delayed analog switch off will impact Centec's business negatively, because the more we delay, the more we pay for dual illumination. We are quite aware that there's huge demands on the fiscals, and therefore would like to move away from analog as soon as possible so that we don't put pressure on the fiscals in terms of the funding of dual illumination. Centec's strategy is to look at diversifying services and to drive business sustainability. And we're quite aware in this instance, Chairperson, that we need to be looking at driving our revenue and earning foreign currency. And therefore, we are focusing on expanding our business more outside of our borders. One of the challenges we faced is the shortage of technical skills, which are a risk that we need to manage as a business. And in doing so, we have partnered with universities and offered bursaries to students so that we can begin to grow the pool of skills that we can bring into CENTEC. And we are spending part of our budget to support learners who are wanting to move into the field of engineering, particularly in the broadcasting space. The introduction of the new ICT policy will change the policy and regulatory environment. We're busy studying and looking at the impact of the published ICT policy or ICT white paper, and we will be participating with the shareholder and in responding to what needs to be done to make sure that the industry is sustainable moving forward. We'll then focus as CENTEC into innovation, and as I've said, we'll explore opportunities across the borders. Let me conclude, Chairperson and committee members, by saying that CENTEC has achieved an unqualified audit opinion in 4 successive years. We've improved our labor relations at CENTEC, and I think that the situation is more conducive for work now more than it has ever been before. Our relationship with our workers' union or trade union has improved significantly, but we continue to engage our stakeholders as much as we can. We remain focused on driving revenue and profitability and long-term sustainability of our business. The DTT network is being stabilized, just make sure that when we go commercial, we don't have any glitches, so we're keeping on making sure that we're implementing technologies which will enable us to monitor performance of our network. We supported our socio-economic development and endeavors at CENTEC. We have made sure that we have picked those SMEs who are struggling to make it in our sector, and we have supported them in a way that we have been able to in the last financial year. We also focus on developing new skills and policies of human capital development. Lastly, we do want to say we pride ourselves in effective corporate governance that is monitored and managed by our board chair and non-executive directors, and we're very grateful to our governing body who has made us able to deliver on what we had set ourselves to do in the last financial year. With those words, Chairperson and committee, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Indeed, we did interact, maybe I should have said, we interacted with the AG's office or team last week, Tuesday, in terms of getting a reflection on matters that the AG would have had with entities, all of them, including the department. I thought it is important, and just to reflect that while I open for members to comment, it was refreshing to sit and listen, because sometimes most of the portfolio or the entities in the portfolio have regressed, and it's comforting to know that CENTEC has not regressed in terms of its performance. I think let me just open for members to make comments, questions. Members, we're going to follow the same routine of first round, throw questions, and then second round. I noted Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Killian, Honorable Shin, Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Zotis. In that order, Honorable McKenzie, we can start.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, CENTEC, for the presentation. It's always a pleasure to see the quality of your board, all highly qualified, the fact that you have no borrowings, and that your governance is really up to scratch. So it's always, year after year, it's a pleasure to see you. You've raised as a risk the delays in rolling out digital terrestrial television, and the fact that you need to run dual illumination, and you obviously need to maintain the analog network. Can you give me a figure? I noticed in terms of your grant income that you received $100 million from government last year, received the year before $107 million in the year under review. can you give me an indication over and above that grant income what the shortfall was that you've had to carry to maintain that in the past year and in the year under review, and what it's likely to be in the following year, in this year, to keep that going? And do you have any projections for the year after that if it's delayed even further? And we've seen this with court actions. The ripple effect of that, the failure to meet that ITU deadline in 2015 on government, it's not your fault, but it becomes your problem. So I'd just like to get an indication of how much this is costing you as an entity. Then in terms of your license charge, your revenue, on page 118, there's a very useful revenue breakdown. In terms of your terrestrial television services, in terms of your FM radio services, which went up from 290 to 265, I'm sure given that you met that target for increased radio stations, that would account for some of the increased revenue. We had a complaint when we went to see a couple of community radio stations that the cost of the Centec licenses were too high for community radio, and it was making them very, very difficult to operate or be sustainable. Have you got any plans for addressing that, or do you have a blanket policy when it comes to allocating license charges for stations, or are you flexible depending on application? And then let me use my third question. On page 27, I would imagine that, and you've also alluded to this quite often in your report, that foreign exchange is a risk for you. And I notice on page 27 you say, and purchasing of foreign currency at favorable exchange rates when necessary. You know, I don't know much about this, but I remember, and I'm sure the chairperson could bear with me, in the years of banking, you can never tell where this currency is going, especially today. It is so volatile. Somebody goes to bed and the rand falls. Somebody wakes up and the rand rises. You really don't know where you are. But I also see in your report you talk about that you don't practice hedging as a strategy, which I think many state-owned entities know how disastrous that can be. What steps do you take to mitigate that risk in terms of buying forward cover? Or, you know, again, I'm not too skilled on this, but I'd be interested to know from you what steps can you take and can you put in place besides hedging that could mitigate the currency risk for you? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable
Kenyon. Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to align myself to the sentiments of Honourable McKenzie with regards to having very valuable information in the annual report, and I want to align myself to the comments expressed to say that good work, well done. Also, as far as improving accountability, having a social responsibility to give a hand to SMMEs, etc. I think it's very good. Operating in South Africa, you have to keep a business sustainable, but on the other hand, you also have to extend a hand of friendship and upliftment to those that you are engaging with. So good for that. I have been largely covered with the question of Honourable McKenzie with regards to the digital migration costs and the delays that we experience there. Have you done any calculation to determine sort of on a year-to-year basis when you would have to invest capital, infrastructure, you know, replacement of current infrastructure? And obviously also what you would require to keep on maintaining the infrastructure. You have indicated that it is placing a lot of pressure and it is one of the most severe risks, but it would be valuable to determine what, you know, what exactly the figures would be in the year on year to come. Then, Chairperson, I just wanted to, I think it's excellent that they have good management of talent. The skills, the technical skills that you feel that there's a severe shortage, Does it mean that you're only now going to engage in with universities for bursaries, so you do not have any current bursary program for engineers? Just a question as far as that is concerned. And then lastly, Chair, I don't know if it's probably a very simple explanation, but could you please explain on page 57, you have your top management structure in the middle of the page, personnel remuneration by salary band. Top management, there's an average personnel remuneration by employee, and then there's also an average for senior management. And it seems to be that the top management average pay is lower than the senior management. Could you please just explain that? And then lastly, the page 58, just if you turn the page, you have indicated your investment in trying to build confidence in the organization, to give an opportunity to staff to move through, etc., which we really have to commend you for. But it is significant that you still have 50% of the employees leaving or resigning. Now, is that because you are so good at developing them that they are being pinched by the private sector? Could you just give us an indication of the underlying reason? Obviously, you conduct exit interviews with those resigning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Shin. Thank you, Chairperson.
Excuse me.
Yes, building on my colleague's questions about the delayed transition to digital broadcasting, can you tell me what your projected revenue streams were for had we switched off last year when we should have done, and that the money, the potential revenue that you're losing caused by the interminable delays in this project? And are you able to give us a figure on what you have invested totally on digital transmission equipment over, I don't know, when you started doing it, 5-6 years ago, perhaps longer, if it's possible to get it now or, you know, at some later stage. And also obviously wanting to know what potential revenue you're losing out on because of this. And then the dual illumination budget was omitted entirely from this year's budget at the start of it. Can you tell me what has been negotiated to fund the dual illumination at this stage, and who it came from? Because it should be coming from the Department of Communications, from what I understand, because they're in charge of the project and would seem to have not budgeted for it. And then the... there was another one on that. The contact centre you talked about in your annual report, page 37. I assume this is the the call centre for support of the users of the set-top boxes, and if so, what the cost of that call centre would be, or is this a call centre for the installers? Is it for the users? Can you please just explain that? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. Thank you about the presentation. But then I've got some few questions. You have the number of targets were not achieved due to number of challenges. Have been this resolved? One of the products which have always struggled is the shortwave BSD services. What are the future plans to make sure this product is profitable? One of the risks highlighted by the entity is lack of dynamic workforce that can take Centec into the future. Centec highlighted that they have initiated partnership with institution of higher learning to build necessary capacity. What have been the success rate of this intervention, and how many of these graduates have been company managed to retain? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
On the development of SMMEs that you have assisted, you know, there's never been a time when we have an abundance of opportunities or resources. They're always scarce, and there are people who can maneuver and do some double dipping benefit here and there. To avoid the double dipping, we need to have the names of the SMMEs we've assisted, so that in future, when we happen to engage with them, we know that they've already been assisted, and we focus on those who have never been assisted. On the CEO position that is being, CFO position that is being currently in the process of being filled, can you clarify at the stage where you are now, like you have advertised already, you have done interviews, maybe you are busy with selection, or what do you mean when you say you are in the process of being, the person being filled? I'm trying to avoid questions that have been asked already. But this one on the shortage of technical skills, you say it's a risk that is to be managed, and you have offered bursaries for you to have the required skills. With the current instability in universities, how far has this affected your bursaries? It may be some kind of a loss, because they're not going to yield the results that we're expecting. And what will be the alternative, not knowing when will the situation last? Is there any plan to make sure that you have the skills that you're in need of?
Okay. Thank you very much, members, for your questions and comments. Let me start by looking at this page. Actually, the question I'm going to first ask is linked. It's linked to page 43, 44, 45, and 46 of the annual report, where you look at your terrestrial television, just the explanation below, FM radio, medium wave radio, shortwave radio, where mainly part of the problem of network has been Eskom load shedding, while understanding that there isn't much that Sentinel can do about. My concern is around the standby generators that failed. Because you expect that in terms of technical capacity and the work that needs to come through, that should kick in, and obviously there should be some maintenance that happens to be able to detect this in ahead, and ensuring that this does not cause more damage. And I want to know, in terms of this, have there been a loss in revenue? And what were the mitigating factors, especially if there was a network availability? You say, well, the network availability target has been achieved. Some of these issues during that time, what has been the issues engagement between you and your clients? Did this bring any downtime, either in radio or TV? And how was that resolved? Then there's this issue under medium wave, where it talks about aging infrastructure and the unavailability of spares resulting in extended service outages. Just explain the difficulties here and how this will be mitigated going forward. Now, the second issue I want to go to is around your non-achievement of target strategic goal 3 in terms of, and where you're giving an explanation of the 13th check, noting that that has been resolved. But just to understand, because this matter was long outstanding, and surely one would have anticipated that
should this not, because it was the cause of an industrial strike for Centec employees previously, and therefore I'm not so sure how we didn't anticipate that if it's not yet resolved, we would not be able to get into the performance agreement, because I mean, even when we did oversight, that was very clear from the employees up front. So I just want to get clarity on that one, as to how did we not anticipate this, and why didn't we put in place mechanisms up front to ensure that we mitigate this threat of a non-achievement of a target. Then there's an issue of potential for cyber attacks under your risk on page 29. Just to understand if Centec has its own cybersecurity plan and its own process, or is this in how does that link between Centec and the DTPS cybersecurity hub and the activities there and the work that they're doing there? I'll stop here. Other questions I think I'll ask later, just to get the flow as we agreed with the members on three questions. But I think just to say, safely to say, it is quite refreshing to interact with Centec with the quality of work that comes through in terms of performance and financial management of the entity. Over to you, Chairperson and the members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the kind words and to the other members of the committee. I must also thank the staff and management of Centec, because they are the people who are in the coal face who do this day-to-day work. And I must also express just sheer gratitude of the board to the acting CFO, who has stood in and done stellar work when, you know, there is a process to interview other candidates, but he's been very diligent, and Mr. Negabambe has been a very, very good member of the Centec family, and this is demonstrated as well in the work here. So with regards to, I'll also jump to the question from Honorable Tsete in terms of the CFO. The CFO process right now is that we have made recommendations to the minister. The process from the board's end is complete. The submissions have been made, and we are hopeful that in another week or two there would be an announcement. We were hoping that this process was closed earlier in the year, but by the time that the announcement happened, the preferred candidate at the time had taken on another role, so we had to restart the process again. But we believe that we are now, we've worked it, and the ministry and the department were very supportive in that. And equally so, I must also thank the department in terms of the efforts that the department went through to help contribute to the cost of the dual illumination, which, and my, I think the department came through, I think some of the funds came out of the departmental budget to help cover that. The question around the mitigation of the Forex risk, this is something that has come up at the board, and the board's view is really to look at two things. One is that, as Honorable McKenzie pointed out, there's always hedging can be very tricky, and the view that Centec that we've taken is to look at containing the growth of satellite usage, because that's a cost that is incurred in Forex. So and the recommendation was for management, and that is something to look at moving some of the work to a terrestrial network where possible, use a fiber optic network, because those costs will be carried. So in essence, we cannot entirely eliminate the cost of satellite, but at least to contain the growth as the usage goes. So that goes to the second thing that management are working on is to look at business outside the borders, because those revenues would be earned in foreign currency. And that will contribute towards mitigating some of that. Satellite costs are the second biggest cost to Sentech, so it will take some years to offset that. And we may never really quite achieve it, but there is also a view that says, let us look at whether there isn't other avenues that Sentech can look at in terms of satellite, whether Sentech should be entirely a customer or whether there is some other mechanism that the company can interact with, look at whether it's equity or some other offset mechanism that can be there. Of course, working with the department, because the department has been working or at least looking at a business plan for satellite costs, but it would require greater collaboration that is outside of Sentech. So the view is to probably not look at hedging, but look at earning some revenues and also containing the growth of expenditure in foreign currency. And I will hand to the CEO and the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee and the CFO for the other questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. To address a couple of questions, my CFO and Executive of Operations, CEO, will assist me in some of the questions. But the first one was around the issue of the dual illumination cost in the last financial year and in the year under review. The last financial year, we received the dual illumination subsidy of $107 million, so we were short by $32 million in terms of our projection. So overall, on an annual basis, we're estimating that or budgeting that dual illumination cost is in the region of $140 million, and I think that increases by inflation year on year. So we did receive that funding in the last financial year, and in the current financial year, you did allude to it, Mr. McKenzie, that the Honorable McKenzie. that we did receive funding for about $100 million. This was from the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services, DTPS. So we're very grateful for that. It left us with a shortfall of around 40 million rands, and that's what we really need to contend with and manage around. And what is the impact of the shortfall? It eats into our EBIT, in our profitability, and therefore it means that our reserves year on year will continue to deplete. So what will be the ultimate or the end result of that? I think we will have to come up with some other financial strategies on how we can mitigate that risk, but we're looking at it in the light of the business sustainability moving forward. You also asked a question around the FM revenue and the community broadcasters' challenge to pay Sentech because they claim Sentech is expensive. I think signal distribution is not cheap, but what Sentech has done, we've got a differentiated tariff which basically classifies commercial broadcasters to community broadcasters. We do subsidize Sentech, and I think previously the Department of Communications and DTPS had a fund for subsidizing community broadcasters, but that fund has dried up now, so it doesn't exist. So it means even as we continue to accommodate the challenges faced by community broadcasters in terms of tariffs, they still continue being unable, despite the fact that we've got a differentiated tariff for community broadcasters. It is, I would say, maybe one of the risks that we face from an FM broadcasting revenue perspective. Very important part of our industry, but I think it's going to be an issue that needs to be managed from a policy perspective as to how do we still with the funding of community broadcasting, because it is not a profit-generating venture at all. It is about disseminating community information. I think, as CFO, if I've missed anything, you please fill the gap on the financial side.
Thank you, sir. I think just in terms of the dual elimination, the right number is actually 160 million, which we were budgeting to receive, but we received only 100 million. I mean, especially this year, we're about 81 million rand underfunded, just in terms of the dual elimination cost. In respect of the calculation of the average personal remuneration per employee, unfortunately that is a mistake that has happened when they were, a typo that happened when they were finalizing the final prints. And I think we'll pass an adjustment and send a revised copy.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and the question around, I think most of the questions have been addressed, but the one particular one that wasn't addressed was the issue of saying what is the cost of the infrastructure, and I assume that is from Honorable Shin, the infrastructure which I would assume you're referring to the DTT infrastructure. Currently, since 2008, when the DTT project started, Centec has spent over R1 billion on DTT, but some of that had to be replaced, obviously, because in the infrastructure you may find that some of the equipment would have had a useful life of 7 years and so forth, and then that would have needed to be replaced. However, it is the exact number that we will, if it's required, we may be able to provide to the committee in writing.
And there's still a question around the interruption and the issue. See all.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Maybe I'll start with the question from Honourable Shin, Honourable Killian on the bursary programs. On top of the our support to the universities or institutes of higher learning, we do have internships where we then bring engineers to unemployed engineers to the organization, and then we appoint on average 60% of those. And some of them, while we are busy training them, then they get poached by other organizations that are paying them a better salary than us. Also on the issues of replacement of analog equipment, what we try to do to prolong the lives of the current equipment is that as and when we retire an equipment, we don't dispose of it. We keep it for spares, so that if a similar equipment fails, we take the spares from the equipment that we've been using to then make sure that we maintain the network for us as part of also then playing a role and then a part in the digital migration, understanding the issues. On the question I think that was asked by Honorable Dongeni on the shortwave. Shortwave all over the world has reached end of life, which means to maintain what we have is also expensive. Most of the people who are manufacturing this equipment are not manufacturing the equipment anymore. So what we do again, we're supposed to retire equipment or tubes, we refurbish them and then utilize them for the future. But what we're doing, we did a test on digital radio for shortwave. So we've done the test for digital radio for both shortwave, FM and medium wave. So our plan is to move to what we call a DRM plus, which is a digital version of that. we were busy with the plan to say a 5-year plan to look at the sustainability of shortwave. But what we're doing, we're looking at the continent, because the continents are the main users of shortwave. So we were talking to the countries in the continent. We've already concluded some business opportunity with one of the countries in the continent to try and maintain the revenue of the offshore wave for the organization. I think there was a question from the chair on load shedding and the impact of that on the failing STGs or the failing generators. Chair, we do have the service level agreement with our customers. Sometimes when we have a little bit of interruptions now and then, we are still within the service level agreement. But we do have monthly engagements with our customers so that we can make them understand the challenges that we're having. At least from a load shedding point of view, we haven't things have improved, so we haven't had much of that as a problem. But then that gave us an opportunity then to say, let's get the service provider who supplied us with all these generators to come and test them. So we've done a full analysis of the generators and to try and see where are they failing, what is it that we can do to make sure that that does not happen again. Medium wave, we've done the trials for medium wave with some of our customers to say, let's find a way of moving to the digital medium wave as well, because the equipment there also is obsolete.
If I may, Chair, just to conclude some of the questions. There was a question raised around the technical skills from Honorable Killian. We do have bursary programs in three universities, the University of Pretoria, Wits, and Cape Town. And what is the impact of fees must fall on us and our bursary students? I think it is as big as it is to any other parent who's paying school fees. We're watching it quite carefully. We're continuously being apprised of the progress on resolving the issue of fees by the universities. But it is one of those risks which we are trying to find ways of mitigating them. But we will continue with the program. I think it is a necessary contribution to society and to the development of skills. And the shortage of technical skills, we're trying to address it by, as Mr. Matabane has said, by those internships for our technicians and training the young engineers. There was a question raised around some employees who resigned in the last financial year, which seemed to be quite significant, and what impact did it have on the business? Is it because we train our people so well that they get poached? We have accepted that as a state-owned entity, our people will be poached by private sector industry. And as a result, we take a view that much as we will be unhappy when they leave, but we need to take that as our contribution to the sector. So we train them well, we expose them well, and then the industry will then take them ready and offer them higher salaries, which we cannot match. But we're trying to manage that by developing a lot more people within our ranks of Centec. There was a question raised by Honorable Shin on the issue of revenue projections. That is the exclusion. I think CFO will deal with that detail, the exclusion of analog. That is, what is our revenue outlook post-analog switch-off? We may not have all the details now, but that detail we can submit to you, but we'll give you maybe the high-level response. Generally, what happens when you switch off analog, you need a lot more broadcasters to be on the digital platform to be able to match the revenue that you'll generate on the analog platform. So that's why we really need the regulator to license more broadcasters or more broadcasters to produce a lot more channels so that we can be able to generate more revenue from the digital platform. What is the situation with the contact center? It was asked by Honorable Shin. The contact center is a very critical element of the success of launching of DTT. And the absence of a contact center will really impact on the users who would not have anyone to call when there's a fault on their set-top boxes. So it is an important cost which needs to be borne by the Department of Communications, but the budget for that has not been available as yet. We have communicated with the ministry and expressed the urgency of the matter, and they have committed to find ways in which they can raise the funding for the contact center so that we can have successful launch of DTT. There was another question, I think, on the success rate of our Bursar students from Honorable Ndongeni. In the last couple of years that we've been offering bursaries to our students, it's not been long, Honorable Member, that we've been doing this. So we wouldn't say we have got the four-year graduates yet, but I think we're hoping that this year we'll have one of the initial graduates from our program. But we're still hopeful that the issue of non-writing of exams may be resolved in the early beginning of next year. But most of our students continue to be successful simply because our Human Resources Department keeps a very close watch on what they do. They get their results. They offer the support. We bring these students to the organization during their holidays. And also when we see that their performance is lacking, we interact with the universities direct to find out exactly what is the problem faced by the students, and we provide the intervention that is required to support them so that they can succeed. There was a question raised also by the chairperson on the issues of did we not anticipate the delay on, the risk of the 13th cell being unresolved. Chairperson, I think there was a time where the business was convinced that the issue has been solved. The contract was signed by between the business and the trade union in I think it was in September of 2015, subject to colleagues in CFO. Between September and August and September of 2015, there was an agreement signed with the union. If that agreement had been implemented, I think this was our management of that risk. We said if we signed in this second quarter, then we can be able to have all the signed contracts and the performance reviews done third quarter and the fourth quarter. When I arrived at Sendeg in October, that was the first issue that I had to deal with, where people were Madolo Pezulu, Terin Cherk here. So, unfortunately, there was some misunderstanding about the contract that really now dragged out the issue of the resolution of the 13th cell. But we came to an understanding that, look, it's not the best approach, but it took us almost 6 months from October. In fact, we resolved it in July of this year. We indicated to them that, look, let's do an agreement that says to you, in terms of the performance bonus over the year, we will guarantee that every member of the bargaining unit will not get less than 60% of their monthly salary as an appreciation and a bonus of what they've performed. But we want you to be evaluated on your annual performance so that we can be able to measure you and reward you in terms of our short-term incentive scheme, which is based on performance. So what we did then, we're grateful to the board for allowing us to do this, because we then said to the workers, we'll agree with you that this is what we would pay, but we guarantee you that if people perform above the minimum required, they will actually earn a bit more. And it happened that because we wanted to demonstrate that the performance-based reward is the best one to go with. And it was based on the fact that as long as the business has performed, we will be able to reward the workers for their contribution to that performance. And we did reward the workers for their performance, and the performance reward that was done based on the policy was better than what we had guaranteed. So we have demonstrated to the workers that the performance-based reward is actually better than the 13th cell. So at least in this year, we've demonstrated to them and we've resolved it. We could not anticipate that at the time in October of last year, there would be a misreading of the agreement, which really took us long. We went to the CCMA and back, and we had people to resolve that issue for us. But it is resolved now, and we couldn't anticipate any misunderstanding on that agreement. But it's now resolved unambiguously. It's not a multi. It is a. In terms of the salary increases, it is not a multi-year, because they said because you don't give us a 13th cell, we don't want a multi-year agreement. So we had to accept that as a first phase. It's not a multi-year agreement, but in terms of the reward, we've basically agreed that there will be no discussion around the 13th cell. That the 13th cell issue now is a I would say it's a multi-year agreement. But what we had wanted to do was to link to make sure that the multi-year agreement is also linked to the salary increases. So they said, well, if you're not giving us 13th cell, we're withdrawing our multi-year agreement. Let's see if your bonus scheme, your short-term incentive scheme, is going to work. And they've seen that it works, and we're hoping that as we begin to speak about how we move forward into the future, they will then enter with us into a multi-year agreement, but we have not been there yet. On the cyber attack issues, we have a policy and a plan, Centec, to try and mitigate against the cyber attack issues. A very difficult one to manage, but we've done an assessment of our business using the SSA, and they've identified what areas we need to strengthen, and we're in the process of putting plans in place now to strengthen the security of our IT network. And we have a policy in place that deals with IT security. I think we've pretty much covered most of the questions in the first round.
Thank you very much. I'm going to note hands for second round. Honorable Getabahle, you have your hand. Yes, I'll start with Honorable Getabahle. Rodetsi. Shin. Killian. And Mackenzie, or not Mackenzie, will be the last one. Now we get our share.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to ask this question in employment equity on page 53. You said that you've got a challenge with the middle and the junior management and people with disabilities. Did you resolve that challenge? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Sotis.
Thank you, sir. In this set of questions, I asked about the list of the SMMEs that were developed. They may not be readily available now, but moving forward, I think it's important for us to have them so that we also make a follow-up on the composition of the SMMEs in terms of the gender balance. So from a history whereby ICT was male-dominated. So if you don't check these issues of the gender balance of SMMEs that we're supporting, we may perpetuate the situation, those unintended consequences. So you need to check that. And on the training of your staff, whoever you don't have maybe too much say as to whether they want to leave or not, are there no conditions that at least that you don't have a total loss of 100%, that a person after training serves a Centec for a year or two in the meantime when you're still searching for the one that will be staying with the say company for some time? And this other one, I'm not sure if it was responded to, we have this instability and you are not sure how long will the situation take. Is there any other alternative apart from the ones we say we're offering bazaars to? Because that one we are sure of that we are going to get what you plan for. But if that doesn't work, is there any other alternative?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. You've developed content platforms as a new revenue stream. Are you focusing on interactive content for particularly for your city government things? And if so, are they available or could they be used by through decoders that are not encrypted? Then on page 136 of the annual report, you have a case against ICASA. Can you please refresh us on what that is? And you say you're in negotiations to review a settlement. What is the progress with that? Then your irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure on the following page, 137. I'm just wanting to know if, let's just say the wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, is that 16,000 rand? Or should there be three noughts at the end of it? I wasn't quite sure because, you know, we then get on to losses identified during the year, 261 rand. I mean, I think most of us have more of those sort of gaps in our own budget, let alone the company. So I just want to know if they've just neglected the noughts here and if you can explain what those are, please.
Honourable Killian?
You see, Chair, just on this score, this is what happens when you do a little calculation error in your annual report. And actually what I wanted to say was, I think, with reference to the previous question that I'm asking, and we totally accept it. I mean, it's just one of those things that happens. I just first of all wanted to say that I don't think if anybody commended you, I mean, we spoke about the financials, we spoke about the soundness of the business and the governance structures and all of that, but I think we have to also commend you for your KPI performance. In particular, that the Auditor General that is really going through, the Auditor is going with a fine comb through KPIs and its usefulness and reliability, etc. And that in itself is a hurdle that you've overcome with excellence. So congratulations for your 82% achievement. Just wanted to say on your other reports, the investigation. Sometimes, you know, there was a stage when there's sort of a whole tone that was just bad at Centec, and sometimes it permeates through the organization, but you have instilled a sort of a tone of accountability, etc. But what is the issue with the investigations with regards to employees? And it was not completed at final year end, but has it now been resolved? Has it been completed? Has there been any sort of steps taken as far as that is concerned? Could we just have feedback? Because in the end, it also helps if there is an example of what happens to people who are found to be contravening our very strict legislation to ensure accountability. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. If ever you needed an indication that Centec is very prudent when it comes to managing finances, I just look at your annual report, and I have a little printing business on the side, so I know what these things cost. You know, if you look at USASA, there's all this nice spot varnish and this thick paper, and then, the micro varnish is expensive, the spot varnish. And then Centec doesn't have any of that, but you have an annual report that's just loaded with good information, and even the paper is just the right kind of thickness you need to see but not see through the page. So congratulations on watching the cash, guys. Well done. Then, not taking anything away, I believe Dot Zadna are coming, Dot Zadna's financial is just run off a photocopier, so that's even better. On page 55, there's a reference made under an organizational architecture to a new organizational structure to deliver on Centec's objectives and strategic programs has been designed. How long did it take you to design that organizational development program? What was the process? You can just give me a synopsis on that. And what was the cost of doing that? I know it doesn't seem to be a major program, but I would just like to know that. And then just lastly, I see Mr. Mtenda is listed as an independent non-executive director. Is he still director of CENTIC? Or I know he's moved on elsewhere. Is he still sitting in that role in CENTIC? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, members, for the questions. I'll ask the CENTIC team to respond.
Chairperson, I'll just answer the one question. Yes, Director Mtenda is still a member of the board, and he serves on various of the board committees, including the Technology Policy and Regulatory Committee, where he's been a very valuable contributor to the business. But yes, he remains a member of the board.
Thank you, Chair. The question raised by, I think, Honorable Kitabatle, the issue around employment equity, we remain, I think, facing the challenge when it comes to recruiting and attracting people with disabilities. I'm not sure what's the correct term to use nowadays. But we have then, as of this year, consulted with an organization that basically deals with the placement of those category of our communities to assist us whenever we've got positions to be able to address our employment equity from that perspective. So that's the challenge that we've been facing, and that's the challenge we're trying to deal with now, to make sure that we at least provide opportunities for our working or workers who have got disabilities. It also has to be emphasized that CENTIC's business, by its nature, it really requires, especially on the technology side or technical side and technician side, you do require technicians who can be able to climb the masts and be able to fix transmitters. So we try to balance that, you know, without using that as an excuse for not hiring people with disabilities. But I think we are limited into the areas in which we can hire them into our organization. But we are dealing with that as it is now. Honorable Sotesi, the issue of the list of SMEs, we will provide you with the list, but in the last financial year, the ones we directly assisted were about three SMEs that we assisted, and the total assistance that we provided to them to make sure that they are able to do their business was close to R1 million, but we can provide the exact details and the breakdown and the nature of those SMEs that we supported in the last financial year. What is the alternative, you asked, to the issue of shortage of skills if those that we are expecting to get out of the bursaries that we're providing, and if we don't get those immediately, what do we do? We do the internships, and then we get even young people who are not necessarily funded by us onto our list of interns into the business. And that's the way we're trying to build the capacity, by bringing them in. And each year we've got quite a number of interns that we provide, internships we're providing, but we can provide with the exact number of interns in the last financial year, just to indicate to you how we have dealt with the alternative approach to the shortage of skills. And the question raised by the Honorable Sheen, I'll ask the CFO to address the issue of the fruitless expenditure and the accuracy of those numbers. But on the issue around the CENTIC and the CASA's case, if you recall, 3 years ago, CENTIC returned the spectrum that was licensed to CENTIC for broadband services. And linked to that spectrum, there were license conditions, which was to connect about 1,500 schools. So
this is the negotiation we're having with the regulator, saying to them that because we had not implemented that license, that spectrum license, we do require an exemption from the fulfillment of those obligations because we have no platform on which to deliver that connectivity because we're no more using the spectrum you had licensed us to use. So that is an issue that is still under negotiation with the regulator, and we will be reporting on how that has been resolved. Well, yes, I think, we keep waiting. Yes. There was another question around the organizational development. How long did it take us? It was done in phases. It was a project that was to be completed within a period of 1 year. So when I arrived in the center, 50% of the work had been done, and then we accelerated it. We finished the OD that resulted into us developing the structure within a period of about 8 months that we were done with. I can't give you the number in terms of how much it cost us right now, but we can make a note and provide you with the cost that we incurred in doing our OT.
So,
Chief,
just keep
him on that. Okay. I mean, we have an eminently qualified bunch of people in front of us. Can you just give me an idea of what, as a board, you would anticipate that kind of program costing? Just I won't hold you to it. Just an idea of what you think would be reasonable.
It sounds like just an idea of what would be reasonable. 25 million.
Yeah. And I would say I think we really refrain from sucking our thumbs, especially on numbers, because it could be dangerous. But we commit to providing with the exact number, Honorable Mackenzie. We will do that.
Chairperson, just on the issue around the investigations, that we're still pending at year end. These investigations are not yet finalized. They're still in process of being finalized, but I believe that they are actually at advanced stage at the moment. They relate to the change of bank accounts, which was a scheme which was perpetrated by one or two employees that phone in and say, please change your bank account to the following. And I think the loss that we have is 105,000, but I think we managed to prevent the fare losses better than 105,000. And we believe that in the next maybe quarterly meeting, we'll be able to provide feedback as to how far we've gone in concluding these investigations and action that have been taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And the question around note number 32 with regard to irregular expenditures as well as fruitless and wasteful, the numbers are indeed in rand thousands. It's not 251 rand.
Thanks. On the question of the content platforms developed, you recall that Centec is a wholesale organization. So what we do, we develop the content and the network for our customers, and then the customers, we don't interact with the end user. So the customers are the ones who decide what type of set-top box they use. So for us, we just make sure that whatever network we develop is interoperable with whatever type of set-top box they want to use. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that concludes the questions that were raised and the follow-ups. I just want to thank the team from CETEC, led by the chair and the board audit chair, together with the CEO, the acting CFO. So thank you very much for the presentation and interaction. I think for me, going forward would be potency, or there is a need when we reflect and engage with the department, I think, DDG Shell Embassy, especially around the issue of ICT policy review. There's a need to also reflect. I don't remember department talking about an amendment to CENTEC Act. The Act is quite old. I'm reflecting this, noting that it's not within your target now, but possibly going forward is something that you need to start considering, especially if you need to start playing into the future, reflecting on the dynamic environment that you are in. You need a legislation that is going to enable you to be able to play in that space and be able to play within the digital environment. So I thought, let me just reflect that as you do the engagement, maybe next time you do your shareholder compact discussions or your discussions with the department, this is something that as CENTEC you might have to look at, because it will enable the entity to be able to deal with its future challenges. So I thought that's, for me, it's very important, and looking, because it's really refreshing to look at, even that you have started to look at beyond, because I was worried that, you know, once we migrate, is there a strategy to sustain the environment? Today, I mean, your OTTs are providing platforms. If people start moving, what is going to help CENTEC to survive beyond the mainstream media as we have now? Your radios and your TVs, I mean, your online radios are becoming popular lately. If they grow, what's the strategy? So for me, that's why I'm reflecting on this issue, even around the legislation, how we deal with it and how we're going to be able to survive as CENTEC going forward. So with those few words, thank you very much for your presentation. Will now members move to the presentation of USAS and USAF. What we'll do, we'll take 5 minutes stretching team to set up. Thank you very much.
I'm not just saying, yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, shall we start, members? And welcome to USASA, led by Acting Chair Mr. Tawe. With other board members who are here and Tim, I think we'll do the introduction. Let me just firstly say that, members, immediately we received our annual reports, I wrote to the minister after receiving a joint report from USAF and USASA, inquiring why the report was joint, not separated as per the norm, and also as per the discussions following my predecessor's committee discussion. We had a discussion with the minister, who eventually informed that the issue was around cost, but they will separate the documents. Unfortunately, both the documents arrived, the separated annual reports for USAS and USAF arrived yesterday. I felt it would be unfair to circulate those documents because I wrote the letter quite 2 weeks ago. And to receive documents on a Monday when members are in constituencies and have no access to either their laptops or pigeonholes where we receive our documents is just not workable for us. So the documents were never circulated to members, neither the presentation. Subsequent to that, I just received a letter from the minister confirming our discussion that he had requested USASA through the DDG SOC to ensure that the documents are separated. And I'll highlight to the team specifically the importance and why. When the portfolio committee decided that the reports, strategic plan and together with the reports be separated, was precisely because at some point there was intertwined reporting and accounting and also in terms of financial planning between USAS and USAF. There was no clarity at that time. You'd find that money that is supposed to be in USASA, you'd find it used in USAF. Money that was supposed to be in USAF, you'd find it used in USAS. And that was one of the basis why the separation of the documents. So that in terms of reporting, in terms of tabling the reports, what needs to happen in terms of your plans, but also in terms of accountability. So that it's very clear when accounting, what are we accounting for, and for which entity. So I thought, let me flag this, members, so that you are aware. The documents are available from the team, but because they arrived late, I just felt that because normally we do circulation of documents a week before to members so that you allow members a time to prepare, which is we circulate by Wednesday. If we are late, it's Thursday morning. We do not circulate any documents on Friday or Monday as a committee. That is our standard, and I felt that if we are to circulate anything yesterday, would have caused any more confusion. And the instruction to the team, especially the committee secretary, was that let's proceed with what we have so that we do not hamper on the oversight ability of members or preparations that they have done already in advance in preparing for this committee, because we are not dealing with one entity, we're dealing with three entities in a day. So I thought, let me just flag this so that members are aware, and also to give an explanation to the board together with the executive team that is here. I hope the matter going forward will be clarified properly so that we do not have the same situation going forward, and that as well DDG Shalembe, so that the SOC department, SOC unit in the department is very clear in terms of what is expected and how we're supposed to deal with matters. So we'll proceed with that and allow Board Chair Tawe to lead the delegation. And you can do your introductions and hand over to the executive team to present.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and also want to greet your deputies or colleagues next to you.
Protocol will get them into trouble. They can never be deputies. It's a committee of members. They are support staff of parliament. Otherwise, you start politicizing them.
Let me correct that. Let me correct that. Greetings to your committee members that are sitting next to you. And also, I want to extend my warm greetings to my colleagues of the portfolio committee from the different parties. Also, at my back, I've got the entities that were presenting, and also DTPS officials. I want to also greet. I want to actually thank you, Chair, for clarifying the issue around the report. And we sincerely apologize for any inconvenience that this has caused. We thought, in our greatest mind, that when we compile this report, which has all the sort of the divisions, that it's an appropriate manner. But luckily, the chair picked up that there was some errors that had to be corrected. So we're thankful of that. Just recapping. My introduction. And I want to say the year under discussion, under review in this committee meeting was quite a tough and a challenging one, especially for some of us who came on board at the latter part of the financial year, as you would appreciate. And everybody around here is aware of the challenges at that latter part of the year. That occurred, which included the flight of executives and the board because of its term having been expired, and also the sudden departure of the chair, Ms. Phumla Gadebe. We had, as a new board, had to arrest the situation with the limited time that we had to close up the year, because effectively we had just the last quarter at our hands. And I must really thank the board members that are here next to me, and also the executives at the back, about the manner that they conducted themselves, the due diligence that they put into the business for us to get the results that we have today. Very quickly, just introducing my team. I've got next to me the CEO, who's been on the job now for his fourth month, Lumko Mtinde. I'm sure everybody knows about him. On my left, I've got Shandu Lungelwa, who's chair of the operations committee. And next to her, you've got Ngaba Mandela, who's the chair of REMCO and HR committee. And far next to him, you've got Linda Nene, who's the chair of BAC committee. And also, I want to introduce a new member who has joined us just yesterday, who's our chief financial officer. He's sitting, is he there next to you? He's Mohammed Cohen, and he's a new kid on the block. After such search, aggressive, looking for the right person to fill that job. As you know how important it is for this institution, we managed to actually get hold of him. And at my back, I've got support staff. I think I've got three executives. One executive of performance, the other one of operations. And in front of this committee, I must really thank the previous person who was acting as a chief financial officer, Makobo Sepire, who did outstanding work as far as getting our finances to where they are today and laying the foundation. Just to recap, for instance, in terms of the internal issues that as a board we had to actually put focus on as far as getting the board to be where it is. One, it was the performance of the board as per the annual performance plan. I must say there's been challenges there, but the situation could have been worse. And I think where it is now, it cannot get worse than that. Secondly, the issue of digital migration has been a sort of a challenge for us, and we hope it's going to get better. It cannot be worse. And I must say, externally, you know, we've looked at issues around stakeholder management, and our dealings with DOC in particular. It cannot get worse than it is. I think, for instance, I mean, the good thing is the meeting we're going to have with them tomorrow, where we'll actually again go back in terms of digital migration project and how do we address issues of consent to both of us. So I'm very positive that after that meeting, there's the light at the end of the tunnel. And I want to say the future looks bright, especially with the ICT review, white paper, and with implications for USASA. The executive team is looking at that closely in terms of its implications. Exactly what the chair was saying for CENTEC. We're in that process as well of really looking at what's the implications for us in terms of strategy, in terms of structure, in terms of focus, and so forth. And I think that there's more good than bad. And we'll be guided by our principal in terms of, you know, how do we go forward as far as that. I want to also thank our principal for all the support that they've given us in terms of guiding us throughout the financial year. And I think without their hand-holding, we're not going to be where we are as far as the detailed performance report that is going to be produced here. We had an AGM meeting with them recently where we took them through the same report we're presenting to you. And we had deliberations that were very informed. And I think we took a lot of that, which we hope to implement in the new year. We also had our strategy review recently, and they were part of that, and they actually brought, in fact, more people than we expected. And what we did this year as well in our strategy review is to do something different, to invite the stakeholders, particularly the potential partners that we need to deal with in the coming year, and for them to interact with us, how they see their involvement with USASA. And CENTEC and other companies were there, you know, BBI, and they also gave us a very good input. And because what we're saying now, focus of USASA, leave alone the ICT, which we don't know when is it going to be legislated, is to say we need to actually improve our focus and do a lot of partnership collaboration. That, you know, because we were saying we can do more with the little that we have, particularly in the area of broadband, where we seem to be found wanting in terms of finances. So our strategy really is very positive to say we will find innovative ways of doing more and collaborating with and actually minimize duplications. I think the CEO, for instance, very quickly without going deep, he was in a meeting here in Cape Town, Western Cape, last week, where he met with a body here in Cape Town, NGO, that is actually focusing on galvanizing and consolidating all the Western Cape sort of companies that are offering broadband. And he was invited because they are seeing us as a strategic partner to that. And we're seeing that as a way to go throughout the provinces in terms of, you know, going broadband process instead of having a silo approach which we've had in the past, and then it has less impact and so on. And then obviously with the BDM project, we're seeing a light with the meeting after tomorrow. So with those words, that's all I wanted to say. And the manner of presenting our report is the CEO is going to take the lead, and obviously there's members here who will come in as and when the CEO requires. Thank you. So we'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, through you. Honorable members, I must indicate that any credit in this report is credit to the team and my predecessors. I'm just the face to present it as I just recently joined. But I will try and just navigate through the presentation. And Chairperson, just to add that indeed we had separated the reports, and even with the separated reports, you will see that it's the same information. But going forward, we'll make sure that instruction is followed. Without wasting more time in respect of the context, but just to remind that we have our vision, which is promoting universal access and service of ICTs to all, with the mission that has been guiding us throughout the financial year under review. From a policy point of view, our drivers or mandate is derived from even the vision that South Africa had at the very beginning of our democracy in our constitution in 1996, where we were preparing our country for a digital world. So you can see that the vision has always been there for the digital future. Ours is just to work towards using all the tools, the policy tools and legislation, take us towards this future. And all the different referred tools from the SA Connect and all the related tools are taking us towards that direction. And the Electronic Communications Act, which is quite very specific in terms of our mandate, give us specifics in terms of what is expected of USASA in this regard. And that is the mandate that we derive from the law, and therefore that guided the year under review. Thus, by way of an overview, we had three focus areas as USASA, and we had three focus areas as USAF. As USASA, we planned to enhance human capital through organizational development, realigning our systems, business processes, enhancing good corporate governance, and in respect of USAF, we planned to roll out broadband in two municipalities. And we planned the school connectivity program and, of course, the broadcasting digital migration project. In respect of our performance report, the overview is, as USASA, out of 24 targets, we were only able to achieve 12, which is not a good story to tell. But that is what we were able to achieve with all the reasons that we provided in the report. And in respect of USAF, of the three, we achieved two, which is a 67% performance. Generally, in terms of the further information with regard to the challenges that we had, that the chair referred to, from governance to management, we now have at least in respect of senior management, we have the CEO and the CFO who started yesterday, and the company secretary. So we filled those positions so as to assist in terms of stability and certainty going forward. And also in respect of the board, I think there's a process that the ministry is concluding that will assist us in that regard. We have, even though we're regressing chair, but we have an unqualified audit report for both companies, both USASA and USAF. So the presentation in respect of USASA speaks to the first slide speaks to the green faces, which is the achievements, and I'm not going to elaborate on those. Suffice just to highlight that we've been able to achieve our plans in terms of availability of business systems, the capacitating our legal services, accurate financials with the objective to get unqualified audit opinion, developing plans for both companies and ensuring that they are all properly approved. We also achieved our targets in terms of the executive management plans, the procurement from BEE, we exceeded our targets in that regard. We were able to report as required in terms of the law, monthly and quarterly. Also, we achieved our plans in terms of audit and in terms of our three-year planning and the assessment workshops, risk assessment workshops, because again, we embedding risk management throughout the organization, and we had plans in that regard, and we were able to achieve those, and we hope to strengthen those going forward. The not very good stories start from the OD process. Our plans in that regard were not achieved because there were challenges that led to the board suspending the process, and that then delayed, and as a result we did not achieve that target. But I can say that the board has rescinded that decision, and we are now driving that process going forward, and we hope to achieve those targets. It's impacting also on our systems plans, which were delayed because they were linked to that finalization of the OD process, and we're hoping that we will then fast track and deal with all the implications thereof related to that. We also had targets in terms of the stock counts and verifications thereof, which we could not achieve, but I can report that as we speak now, we've already physically went all out all over the country and verified that, so it is now currently in progress towards achieving that target. And we also had plans in terms of the project management of the BDM project, which we could not achieve, and we are now utilizing internal resources to manage the project. We, from a governance point of view, we could not achieve plans in respect of a committee on social and ethics, which was could not be able to sit because of the numbers of the board that became shrinked as a result of all the governance challenges that we faced. We are reconstituting now and reviewing our terms of reference for committees and making sure that governance is going to be able to provide its leadership to the company. We also had plans in terms of the funding strategy that we could not achieve, and we're planning to pursue those, and we think that the ICT white paper policy is going to help us if you look at the ideas that are set in terms of that policy going forward for funding digitization. We also had plans in respect of audits that were not achieved, and we are concluding those audits in this financial year. We also had plans in respect of branding and stakeholder management, and we are working on those, and we are really trying to rebrand and reposition the company. We also couldn't achieve plans in respect of The review of universal service and access, consultation paper, and plans around discussions focusing on policy and regulatory framework for people with disabilities, and the consultative papers and research thereof, framework on definitions of needy persons, some of these. Or rather, these were not achieved, and we are planning to, as we plan the future, to assess the impact of USAF funded projects and see to what extent these will inform the new plans going forward. In respect of USAF, we had plans for broadband, where we were able to roll out broadband to municipalities that are needy municipalities, under-serviced municipalities, in Albert Luthuli and also in Mutale Vembe district. And those were achieved. Similarly, in terms of school connectivity, we achieved our plans in that regard. What we had not been able to achieve in this regard is related to the targets in relation to the digital broadcasting migration project. Chair, I'm going to, because I want to add to what the chairperson has spoken to in terms of the role played by Ntate Mokgobo. During this period, which was quite very helpful, and he and his team were able to hold the ship and make sure that within all the challenges and constraints from a management point of view, we were able to perform. So I'm going to ask him to speak to the financial performance of both USASA and USAF, and then I will take it after that. Ntate Mokgobo.
Thank you, CEO. Let me firstly greet the chairperson and members of the committee. I will start with the financial performance information on USASA. USASA has generated revenue, that is interest on the bank account that we are having on the call account, of about 8.8 million. And the other revenue that we received were the transfers from our mother department, DTPS, of 66 million on normal USASA operations. BDM distribution and logistics, we had a revenue of 146 million. And the allocation on ERP, enterprise resource planning, was 50 million. So the total revenue for USASA was 262 million, which was budgeted for. On expenditure, compensation of employees, budgeted amount was 41 million, but USASA had spent 38.7 million. For goods and services, the budgeted amount was 23.5 million, and we managed to spend 23.2 million, which was 99%. Depreciation as a non-cash item was not budgeted for, but the expenditure is 3.2 million. On our JPEX budget, we had budgeted 1 million and we had spent 900,000. Total expenditure besides the once-off budget allocation amounted to 66 million from 66.1 million compared to the budget of 66.4, which was 99.5% spending. On the once-off project, which is the ERP and the BDM distribution and logistics, for ERP, the budget was 50 million as indicated before, but we were only able to spend 24.9 million, which is about 50% of the project. For BDM distribution and logistics, The budget was 146 million and we could only manage to spend 14.8 million. This is basically due to the delayed launching of the project, which was done in December 2015. So the total spending on USASA for the year under review, it's 105.8 million compared to the budget of 262 million, which is 40% total spending. The following graph indicates the level of spending per different spending items, compensation of employees being the highest, followed by the enterprise resource planning system of 24.9 million, and the following higher spending item being goods and services, followed by BDM distribution and logistics. Lastly, the spending on CAPEX is the lowest. Basically, the second slide repeats now the spending percentage-wise. I will just refer to the paper as the slide that I cannot read the slide very well. Compensation compounding the 37%, followed by the goods and services of 22%, BDM distribution and logistics 14%, enterprise resource planning 23%, and the other two is the depreciation for 3% and 1% on the CAPEX budget. Now moving on to the USAF. For USAF, we had two revenues also, mainly the interest on our call account amounting to 98 million and the transfers received also from the department of 233.5 million. The total revenue amounting to 331,992. The spending on USAF is as follows. For broadband infrastructure, we had a budget of 30.9 million, on which we had spent 26.5 million, which is 86%. STB subsidies for BDM, we had a budget of 181 million. We managed to spend 172.6 million, which is 95%. Rapid deployment and connectivity, the budget thereon was 17.8 million. We had managed to spend 14 million, which is 80% spending. For bank charges and audit fees, we had a budget of 870 and we spent far much more. 1 million had spent. We had overspent. The spending thereof is 124%. For project cost, the budget was 2.7 million. We had spent 1.6 million, which is 61%. Total spending on the annual budget for USAF is 216 million compared to the 233 million, which is 93% spending. And we also had a rollover from the previous financial year of 18.2 million. On broadband, and on that we had spent 14 million, which is 77%. And BDM tender facilitation, we had spent 676 million. So the total spending on USAF for the year under review is 231 million compared to the budget or allocation of 251.8 million, which is 92% spending, and unspent funds amounted to 20.78 million. The graph that is presented there indicates the pie allocation of the spending. We would see that the broadband digital migration BDM had a huge spending of 75%. followed by broadband infrastructure subsidization of 18%, and rapid deployment and connectivity amounting to 18%. The rest are on the audit, bank charges, and project costs. I would give back to the CEO.
Thanks, Chairperson. You note that we have summarized the different audit findings and compared to the previous years, just to show where the areas that needing our attention. And for both companies, the areas in the main that needing our attention relates to the supply chain management. And we have the audit action plan and have actions that we planned to try and deal with those and make sure that going forward we improve in that regard. As you can see also even in the report that related thereof, there's quite huge amounts of irregular expenditures that are clearly as a result of those challenges. And we're hoping to confront those and make sure that we improve in that regard. There's also audit findings that speaks to planning and performance management. And in that regard, we have already, as the chair was reporting, we already spent a lot of time trying to review our plans and our strategy going forward. Was the biggest problem that is also a contributor to the non-achievement of some targets was because the plans were not very smart. And the AG has identified that as the area that has contributed to this, and we have interventions that we already rolled out that will help us to have at least the future plans smart and aligned to our prescriptions in terms of the regulations for performance information. Similarly, we will be coming back to yourself, Chairperson, and hoping that you will welcome us to review even the 16-17 APP, because if we don't, we're unfortunately going to have the same problems because we've already identified the challenges in terms of that APP for both companies. And also, in respect of financial management and the new CFO, these are the areas that are key that we have to intervene in that regard. As I said, SCM in the main, deviations have been the challenge, and there's been lack of consequence management, and those are the areas that we want to make sure that we strengthen and ensure that we change the culture of the organization. Also, we need to review our policies so that our policies are aligned to the legislation and the national policy, because it is not good enough to say that we have complied with our policy if our policy itself is not necessarily aligned to the national policy, because then we get, even if we follow the correct processes of deviation, but at the end you will have findings because of that. And as I said, in terms of the BDM project, we are dealing with those findings that relate to stock count, and we are already improving on those and making sure that we also explore what innovations, because the whole process that we've embarked on has been quite a very people-engaged process, whereas we can improve through automation of systems and making sure that we can be able to achieve that target without necessarily having a lot of people traveling all over the country and risking thereof many other possible and additional risks. Chair, we just to put you at ease, to add to what the chair was saying, that going forward we have plans that will clearly improve the situation that we're presenting before you, starting from the audit action plan that we are seriously emphasizing on, consequence management, but also in terms of our mandate, we have plans to increase connectivity in under-service areas with emphasis in the health and education and supporting our governments in respect of connectivity and digitization. We want to optimize the funding opportunities, and the new policy is already speaking to how that can be done going forward. We want to improve our project management capacity, organizational efficiencies, because that again will help us going forward. We want to position USASA as an information hub on universal service and access, create high performance culture, conclude on the outstanding projects that are impacting negatively to the organization, which were intended to actually help the organization, like the OD and the ERP process. And with the BDM, we are engaging, as the chair has been saying, with all our partners to make sure that we work together as a team towards achieving our plans in that regard, because this is a huge project where failures in one entity impact on the other entity, etc. So we want to make sure that together we work towards resolving these projects, because we have ideas and we think these can be resolved. Of course, our vision and areas of focus going forward with the digitization is that of creating smart communities and smart villages. Before you can even talk about the cities with the connectivity that we've deployed in under-service areas, if we were to be able to work together through interventions that will ensure that there is maximum usage of all those that network and the platforms that have been deployed there, we can actually create smart villages. But the biggest challenge, of course, is user demand, and we want to stimulate that. So we've got plans going forward that will ensure that we stimulate user demand so that we are part of the future of digital economy. Jefferson, that is the presentation of our two companies, and with those separate financial reports and the performance reports. Just to preempt, Chair, the question that will arise from Honorable McKinsey, that we coming from the media background, we did negotiate we didn't spend much in producing this. We negotiated a better deal, and I think we explored on our experience from the media background. But thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much to the team for presentation. Members, can I take the rounds of questions, comments? As I said earlier on, to Centec, we have interacted with the AG's team on matters around audit. Unfortunately for USASA and USASA, it's really not looking good. It's extreme disappointing, I should say, where I'm sitting. But I think we'll get into the details. Let me just note, members. Honorable Killian will be the first one. Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Shin, Honorable Zodetsi, Honorable Ndungin. In that order, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just by way of comment to say that we are noting the good intentions. We are noting that plans are going to be put in place, but really have to express our extreme concern about internal controls at USASA as relates to the USA fund as well as to its own internal operations. If we look at the reports of the, well, first of all, The Auditor General gave us a presentation last week, and it is very, very serious that as far as the regression in controls were concerned, that USASA and USAF were under leadership, that it was going down. Financial and performance management, it was going up, down. It's only in as much as governance is concerned that certain steps were taken to improve and strengthen the governance structures. But it is not painting a pretty picture. Now, if we look at the amounts that are involved, and we really want to see consequence management, and Chepers and I just want to say that some of the notes indicate that some of the individuals who were responsible for serious transgressions of the SCM have left. Now, the issue here is, does it not amount to fraud, and should those people not be charged for theft and for fraud? Because I would also like to leave if I get contracts, and then just before any disciplinary action could be taken against me, I have a safe haven somewhere, or I have a parachute to allow me to continue working. Will these individuals find a way back in the public sector and just continue where they left off at USASA? So I want to know, what are you doing? How do you strengthen your disciplinary action? And where do you start to charge people in terms of the PFMA? You have the power to do that. In terms of, the accounting authority has the power to do that. You can institute, in terms of Section 84 specifically of the PFMA, you can do that. Why is it not being done? Because, Chairperson, when I look at the AG's finding on the on USASA and on the USAF, it is clear that we're talking about vast amounts. We're not talking about your 216 or 2016 rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure at Centec. We're really talking big money here. Now, look at page 75. The Auditor General finds that the systems were not maintained, strategic planning and performance management systems were not maintained, financial systems and performance on annual reports, statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting system, framework, etc. Expenditure management was poor. It didn't prevent irregular expenditure amounting to 687,000 rand, million, sorry, extra noughts. Now, what we're talking about, as I say, is not small amounts, Honourable Chairperson. We're talking big money here. So the entity, if you don't achieve, you see what is very significant when entities appear before us. One can argue, yes, but you know, it's the Auditor General is looking at the fine comb, etc. But it's so interesting. Those entities where the financial systems and internal controls are in place are the ones that are achieving their predetermined objectives. They're usually the ones that are setting, they have reliable information, and they have useful information, and they're setting targets that they can achieve. So what we're saying to you is, what is wrong? What action are you taking? How are you going to clean up this very important arm to ensure that the poor receives the necessary services and support from government through this entity? This is a very important one, and we have to make sure that it works. Now, I understand that the new CEO has only been there for a couple of months. It's difficult to pick up, but we've seen similar steps taken at other entities where a new broom came in and just set a new tone at the top. And sometimes you are met with resistance, but do you have the support of the board to really clean up this operation and to make it a worth worthwhile operation for those in need of the services. Thank you, Chairperson.
Madam McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, Mr. Mtinda, don't second guess me on the report. I wasn't. But coming from, congratulations on your appointment, by the way. I'm sure some of the osmosis from Centec will filter through to SASA, and we expect to see that going forward, including in the production of the annual report and the spot varnish. But so I wish you well in the task that lies ahead of you. One of the key audit findings from the Auditor General relates to financial management, and I presume that your much-anticipated ERP system will go a long way towards addressing some of those deficiencies. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm a very simple man. And underpinning that ERP system, it's listed as one of the two main cost drivers of your organization, actually responsible for around $25 million. And what's holding back the implementation of your ERP system is the organizational development program. Now, I suppose I have the advantage of reading all the annual reports before the entities come and present to the committee, which was why I asked Centec the same question. Their organizational development program took 8 months, and for an entity that size with that number of employees, 8 months to produce, and then obviously they were able to proceed. So my question to you is in terms of that as a strategic objective and fulfilling the implementation of your EP system, how long is it going to take you to complete that OD program if you haven't done so already in this financial year? And then obviously how long will it take you to implement your new ERP system? Then that's that's one question, Chairperson, because they're related. Then on page 38 of your annual report, under stakeholder engagement, you mentioned that a brand communication specialist was appointed in October 2015 to finalize the development of a stakeholder engagement strategy for the next 3 years. Who is that brand communication specialist, and how much did it cost your entity? Because again, you know, if you look at your targets and you look at your audit report, the things that happen here in the details are the things that are actually stopping you from you know, achieving all your targets, and so your results look particularly bad. So I would just like clarity on that. And then, Chairperson, I've just got some questions on expenses, but I'll save it for the next round because it's all related. Thank you.
No, Bushin.
Thank you, Chairperson. And welcome to the board and the new executive management. Obviously, you're here taking the flak for people who have since fled the sinking ship. But good luck to you. And it's actually, Chair, if I can just make some general remarks. I've been involved with the BDM program now for, 4 or 5 years. And when it was, when USASA and its previous management were selling us the project, they did very many presentations showing the wonderful steps that were going to be taken to make sure that the process proceeded smoothly with checks and balances, independent audits all the way along. And in, a year, the entire process fell apart. And that's obviously to do with the inappropriate people who were appointed to USASA and to its board at the time. I mean, I believe the chairperson actually just walked out of a meeting and was never seen again. I'm not sure if she ever did actually tender her resignation formally. But yeah, so and the impact of the project on the rest of everybody, on everybody else, is actually quite sad. So good luck to you in trying to get it right, but I realise that the pace at which it's going to proceed is not up to you, that there's a court case and various ministerial, should we say, stumbling blocks in the way. Just another point, you perpetuate in your annual report the fact that there are going to be 5.2 million set-top boxes. There's not, there's 5 million set-top boxes. And when we had our BDM update earlier this year, it was confirmed that there were 5 million boxes and not 5.2 million. So please can we correct that? Yeah, you talk about having a surplus of funds because you couldn't actually spend it because the box process had stalled. Any chance you could send some of that money to SAPO, who's storing the boxes at a cost of 30 million a month? I just think you have all this surplus cash. It would be nice. On ICT in schools, now, are you abandoning this now? Because I see there was some mention here that there's no sort of funding going forward, that the Operation Pakisa has overtaken it. Can you please clarify that? Because my impression from Operation Pakisa's presentation, or the Department of Basic Education's presentation to us on Operation Pakisa, I think at the end of last year, showed that there was absolutely no money for it and there was actually no progress and they didn't have a clue what it was going to cost. So obviously one needs some clarity on whether the schools are ever going to get connectivity. On the presentation, slide 18, there was no budget for the tender facilitation by USASA. Now, surely that was the major role of USASA in this whole process, was to facilitate the tender process. And they didn't budget for that, and that was 676 million rands worth of unbudgeted expenditure. Can anybody explain why that hole was there? On the potential risk in your annual report, page 122, under your contingencies, the risk of the wasteful expenditure of set-top boxes that have been produced so far that might not comply with the policy judgment. 1.33 billion, that was then. There's obviously a lot more set-top boxes in the storage now. And you're saying that at a cost of about $6, amendments to the box could save that amount being declared wasteful expenditure. Does that $6 include the tremendous cost of packaging? Mm-hmm. Each of these boxes is individually wrapped, packaged and wrapped. Have you included that cost? Because they're all going to have to be unwrapped, dealt with, hopefully not damaged in the upgrade, and then put back. One wonders if it's not going to cost more to save those than to actually just perhaps find some willing buyer in some obscure place. Then back to this presentation, on page 18, slide 18. We say that the 20.7 million was mainly attributable to unspent BDM funds. And then we also say this one above it, 231 million total spending affected by the delayed BDM project implementation. Yet I see in the items that add up to all that or contribute to that sum aren't necessarily BDM projects, like the broadband infrastructure one, like the rapid deployment project costs, is a BDM project. So I'm just wondering how you justify those two remarks on the bottom right there, those two ones there. And then please, could you, Acting Chair, give us some details of what this meeting is tomorrow, what its purpose is, and who's actually involved in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On the overview, it shows that USASA takes quite a long time before filling in key positions. I see on the overview, it shows that USASA takes quite a long time before filling in key positions. The chairperson resigned on the 4th December 2015, but we still have a acting chair. And the CEO was appointed after a year, who's sort of baptized with fire. And the secretary, at least, is reasonable. The CFO, as well, it says the new CFO at an advanced stage. What do you mean by advanced stage? The recruitment is at an appointment, actually. Recruitment process for appointment of a new CFO at an advanced stage. What do you mean by advanced stage? And on the AG...
No, there's two questions. There's the CFO. You can put another question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And no, what I'm saying here is that they take a long time before they do appointments. Like we say, we still have an acting chair after the first one has resigned. And on the AG's findings, you've already responded to a lot of them, if not all, to correct the situation. However, one is still bothered by the lack of consequence management. How long does it take for you to set up a hearing? And it also questions how often do you do monitoring and evaluation of performance so that you minimize the risk? Because the more we delay to do the hearings and discipline a person, is the more we create a conducive conducive environment for a person to resign and get away with murder. Thank you.
Honorable Ndongeni.
Thanks, Chair. Can you, SASSA, explain and take the committee to its confidence on the impending policy uncertain as a result of implementation of ICT Police Review Panel recommendation, and what this means to service delivery and on universal and service access of broadband to the unserved and underserviced areas, including rural areas? The second one, part of the previous discussion has always been the lack of capacity to carry out the entity mandate. Is SASSA confident that it has enough skills and resources to ensure successful implementation of its current APP?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, members, for your questions and comments. I think mine will start with, I'm taking the decision to start with the finances and go both to, I see the CFO is here, welcome. And welcome to the CEO. The board, we interacted with the board last year on annual report. So you presided over 2 months of this annual report that we're dealing with as the board. Now, firstly, can I be made to understand what law did we follow when we did the inter-entity loans? What gave us that right to do that? What are the conditions of that loan? I see the loan is reflecting page 110 of your annual report. And then there's another loans that are reflecting on page 94. Just trying to understand these loans. Page 110 of your annual reports, it's inter loans. I try to follow the explanation on your note 8 in the things. I couldn't. It was on 2015. Is that loan still there? I see there's nothing reflecting under 2016, but we're dealing with 2015-2016 financial year. So can I get clarity with that? What is the status of that? If it's a loan that is current, what are the conditions and how we did that? Then on, there's another reflection of that, of some loans on page 94. Which I couldn't find. Oh, yeah, page 94, which is an explanation, which is linked to page, not miss 78. As well, I tried to understand those loans that are reflected. If the loans can be explained in detail. The other issue that I need an explanation on is also in page 110, the issue of the bank overdraft. What was the bank overdraft for? If the department authorized that overdraft. see the amount they're sitting under 2016 if we've cleared that overdraft. Then there's page 77. Depreciation and amortization, which is the explanation is linked to 97. If I can get clarity with that, I couldn't understand because there it speaks about staff costs on 11, where the explanation is supposed to be on depreciation, if I'm not mistaken, unless if my eyes were deceiving me, if that 11 is standing under employee-related costs, it's not, it's for depreciation. Okay, if I can be explained, because I thought, I was trying to figure out whether that 11 is for employee-related costs, because I saw the staff costs, and I tried to see if there's any explanation for depreciation under your notes in the financial statements, because it has to be very clear. Then just last one from me. CEO, under your comments on page 9, you indicate that there's a need for additional fund, and you're saying the upgrade of software at approximately $6. We'll save a potential wasteful expenditure. Explain this and how you see this money, where the money coming from. Those are my first round of questions, and then we'll come to the details later. Can give the team to respond.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, members, for comments and questions. I want to start with Honourable Julian. You know, your comments that you've said around our intentions and the fact that I think you laid a very, very compelling reason why we need to succeed, and which is around, you know, what the mandate is for USISA and USAF, which is particularly looking at disadvantaged communities in as far as, you know, ICT services and so forth. We are along those lines, and we undoubtedly, the areas they've raised on SSCM and so forth, I leave that to my members, capable members, to answer, and but I'm sure the explanation you are going to get that will put at ease. I want to go to Honourable Mackenzie, Mr. Mackenzie. I share your concerns around the time overlaps or delays of OD processes and ERP. We've dealt with this thing also as board and management to the extent where it is now, and the CEO will deliberate on that. We are very, very concerned about the pace also as you are, but I'm sure you know we've got a strong union at USISA, and it's very important for us to go through the processes with them as we delve into the operationalization of these processes. The last thing we don't want is to speed up the process, and then we get in the detect and so on, because it's around, you know, the CEO has done a lot in terms of appeasing people's loss of jobs issues, because that's what it's all about. It's not saying we're not going to proceed, but it's just the necessary process in terms of law. And we're dealing with it. Honourable Machine, you know that there's nothing to add on the BDM project. I mean, we're sitting with this issue, which is key for the country, and really we want to expedite it. And with all the issues pertaining to it, the litigation and so on, it's actually it's it was making us, you know, between the hard rock and hard place. So it's a very challenging sort of a situation. And the meeting you alluded to of tomorrow is a meeting that has been requested for by the minister. And she asked for the report last week, and we provided the report to her. She's studying the report, and she wants to meet with us tomorrow to discuss the whole issue of BDM. We hope that meeting will lead us to something else, because we wouldn't want to always, when we come here, it's an issue of that and that, you know. It's the important thing is to get it off the ground and to unblock any issues, and we do it within the law, obviously. So you know, that's as much as I can say for tomorrow's meeting, you know. And I'm sure, if need be, when we come again here to report for the second quarter performance, we'll also include the outcome of that meeting, obviously. And the issue of ICT schools, the CO will tackle that. And other issues, potential risk and so on the SSDP 1.3 billion, and the software upgrading of $6. He has worked very hard on that one, and the reason why, I mean, we actually went to this, it's an alternative, because whatever we do, we look at potential risks, and when you look at potential risks, you must also look at mitigating remedies. And this is one of them, plus the other, which the CEO is going to deal with, you know. Because I think it will be a lack of oversight for the board if we are seeing a tsunami coming and we're just folding our arms, you know. I'm sorry to actually link this to a tsunami, but that's the seriousness of it, you know, based on the amounts, and let alone the amounts, but also the sort of the opportunity that is going to be left, you know, wanting for the people that we need to actually get these things for. So really, you know, I think the board is with me and the CEO, and in trying to get through these things. And it's not easy stuff that you can, like, tomorrow press a button and get it going. You know, once you start pressing this, then there's also dovetailing effects, some negative and so on. So we're really looking at this thing very seriously, and with those words, really, I'm going to ask the CEO and the team to go deeper into the contents of the questions. Thanks, you all.
Thanks, Chad, through you, Jefferson. Maybe let me start from the one that you referred to, because I think both the Jefferson and Honorable Shin speak to the SA judgment question. The $6 is an estimate of software upgrading and the over-the-air encryption, enabling encryption of the boxes. The plan in that regard is obviously, currently we have produced boxes and they are in the warehouses. We need to install them. So there needs to be the take-up, that registration and distribution, so that we then go and install them. And then only when they are installed in the households, then you can then do the software upgrade over the air. So that's the theoretical plan, but of course it is very dependent on the they must be in the households for that to happen. So it's an alternative which we think that it can then comply with the court order, complete the project, and prepare us for the next phase, so that we don't have these delays that are not taking us forward in that regard. I'll deal with some of the questions, and then I'll ask Makhoso to deal with the school connectivity, abandonment, and the set of boxes questions.
And $6. My question was specific. Where is the money going to come from?
Yes. With regard to the money question, we have had engagements with the National Treasury, DOC, and DTPS. There is a challenge of the money, either way. There is this project is having shortfalls for post office, for Centec, for USASA, and for DOC, the call center, and et cetera. So I've had discussions with National Treasury to say we do have challenges either way. Whether we continue in terms of the Constitutional Court, there are costs related to that as well. Whether we try and mitigate it by like saying, let's just comply, there are costs related to that. So I've had those discussions, and National Treasury then said, we must meet as all of us led by DOC and find a resolve so that we can discuss the question of the money. Our submissions for additional funds are still subject to that a conversation between ourselves, our principals, to then see where do we then get things right in order to minimize the additional costs that are there, and where can we possibly get resolve from within what already has been allocated. So those are the conversations we're having there, and possibly in our discussions tomorrow and then further conversations with TTPS, we'll find the results and report back when we come back to Parliament.
Yeah. And just to add to what the CEO is saying, also Chair, there could be a possibility of, it's a possibility which I've not discussed with my board, but you know, thing off my head is we could also think of actually lowering the 5 million, you know, obviously following the processes, and actually just to cover the $6 million, if it means that, you know, we actually will compute dollar is times the number of upgrades, just to come. To come exactly to the same amount of money budgeted for. It's one of possibilities, but obviously we look at the pros and cons of that in the absence of further funding, you know. Thanks.
The estimate is a conservative figure. Otherwise, our engagements with the industry, they're saying it could actually cost less than $6 per box. But the principle is either way, whether we continue with the Constitutional Court, there are costs related to that. Whether we then try and comply, there are costs related to that. So either way, that is the conversation. The take-up that is not at the speed that we expected, it also speaks to some shortfall of funding. The DOC has presented that in that submission, in that discussion. So the National Treasury said we need to have a conversation where we then say which one do we prioritize in all these and what will be the best case for resolving this project. So it's a conversation that at this stage we don't have answers, Jefferson, unfortunately. We'll have answers after the engagement. If then I can move to the next questions, the DTPS is prioritizing the governance question, trying to make sure there's stability at the board. We've got the numbers, and we've got the appointments accordingly. The CFO, it is just at the time of writing the report, of submitting the report, that the process was at advanced stages. But now we've delivered in that regard. Honorable Ndongeni, we are analyzing I wouldn't say now is policy uncertainty, but I would say with the policy directive that has been published, we are analyzing the impact and seeing where to, and we'll have conversations with the DTPS, even in terms of the time frames, because clearly there will be legislative changes, implications, which we all know, you're the ones who make the laws, you all know the time it takes to make those laws. It could be 18 months, 2 years. So we're going to have those conversations. Currently, we're just focusing on finalizing our APP for 17-18, and if that is approved, having regard to that, we will continue delivering, and therefore, in terms of our current mandate, until we have a different directive from the minister. Let me also speak to the question that relates to the consequence management, because I think members spoke to that. we are prioritizing this, but in as it relates, it relates in the main to this very project. So what we did as the new leadership was to, whilst the DOC has that investigation that it initiated, which was driven by them, we focused on making sure that we don't wait for that because it is not in our control. So what we did, I asked AG, I said, please don't sample this project, focus on this project. We need to be able to derive answers in terms of what went wrong, if any, in terms of this project, so that we can then be able to then resolve matters. So we now have the AG report with the outcomes that have been presented to yourselves. The minister has given us the draft report in terms of that investigation, but we will be discussing with her, because in terms of that report, we cannot use it in its current form. There is quite a detailed one page that says this report is cannot be used by other parties. So therefore, we'll be having that conversation and see. So the relationship is that when you then act, you need to then have the package, full package of information. We do have the information in respect of the AG report. We have developed the action plan, and we will be discussing that with the audit committee and the board this week, and then thereafter start working towards that. We're hoping that in our discussions with the minister, we'll then have some direction in terms of that, so that we decide whether we start working on the basis of this report, or we link the two, whatever then the legal advice that we will get after that. So it is a serious matter and a serious commitment that we have taken. Then I'll ask Makgotso to speak to the questions raised by Honorable Sheen in terms of the set-top boxes, the surplus, the school connectivity.
Thank you, CEO. There were questions around the 5 million versus 5.2 million. You are correct, it is 5 million. Cabinet did pronounce on 5 million. I'm not sure if I should respond to the fund surplus to SAPO. I don't think that's within my purview, if I may skip it. The clarification around Operation Pakisa, if I may provide a little bit of context, you recall Operation Pakisa was set up to look at revamping education, basic education, utilizing technology. And in that respect, they came up with a beautiful holistic plan. However, you are correct, there's issues around funding, or they're still dealing with issues around funding. But one of the primary messages that came through within Operation Pakisa, there was a debate around where does connectivity lie? Does it lie within education itself, or is it going to be the purview of the telecommunications department? In that interaction, the decision was that education would focus on its core business of educating learners and teachers, and DTPS and its entities would then deal with the matter of connectivity provision to the schools. Now, because of that debate, long-time debate, you'll notice there had been a decline in our baseline with respect to that project, and that hasn't changed. So until we get confirmation of the issues of funding around connectivity of schools, our baseline remains quite flat, which means we are quite limited in what we can do or how far we can go with respect to schools' connectivity. In an ideal environment, in our utopia, we would say we need to lift the levies to the full maximum of 1% so that we can then afford to do that. If you consider that you have more third and fourth quintile schools than you do have of one and two, it means that you effectively need to have perpetual subsidy into those schools. And so the matter of funding, in our view, there is an alternative in the form of the levies themselves. I think the CEO has explained the issue around the STPs being compliant.
Okay. Well, speaking of the others, just to indicate that one of the priorities that I had to deal with as I joined was the very relationship between ourselves and post office, which was framed from a cabinet point of view, but we had not operationalized it. So it became a priority to get to a point of signing and a SLA that clarifies our roles, that clears the way for the relationship, which is now working well. We are paying them for the service they provide. Of course, as I indicated earlier, there are challenges. No one envisaged that there will be storage this long, because now there are costs related to that, but they are beyond us, and we're hoping that in our discussions with all our parties in the value chain, we'll try and make sure we minimize those so that we minimize the expenses that are as a result of all these delays as they continue. There were also questions that related to Honorable Killian on the interventions, the new tone. Yes, indeed, that is there is no other way. We basically have to change the culture of the organization. We have to change even the planning. That's why we focused in the last months on making sure that we come up with a plan that is not a that is not measurable. We need to have a smart plan so that when you then manage your people, you minimize that conflict that could be as a result of the confusions in what is expected out of them. At least you manage your people with very clear performance contracts, clear expectations out of them, and then you can then take out the problems and that are not related to performance and be able to then categorize and deal with those. So all these interventions are the focus that we have, and I can say and assure you that the board is in support. The board has been fully behind the interventions. We've worked through the strategic processes with the board. So with this, I think we will be able to turn the tide, and hopefully next year, depending on your approval of the review of the APP 1617, if that's approved, then that could improve even the 1617 report. But if that is not approved, it means the 1617 report may have some challenges as well. The Honourable McKinsey, the question of the process, the OD and ERP, we, as the chair has already answered, we're trying to manage it. There are financial implications as well. We're trying to have a conversation. Part of the discussions at the audit committee this week will be how do we then take this process forward, having dealt with the other issues, the people issues, with the union, and what is outstanding in that regard. How do we then move forward so that we do really install the system, finish and migrate everything, because it's going to improve our systems, our efficiencies, and it's going to make us work as a company that is expected out of us. Whereas as an ICT company, we can't be working in the manner we're working. Our efficiencies are expected to be different to other companies. How long? Maybe after our meetings with the board and the audit committee, I can answer the question. For now, I would say we want it resolved as soon as possible. I had thought that by the end of second quarter, I'd be telling a different story. But the second quarter has ended. The story is not different. I'm hoping by the end of the third quarter, I'll be telling you a different story. So we're getting there, and with the support from the board, I'm hoping that we will be telling a different story when we appear to report the second quarter results. I'm going to ask the CFO to, I'll ask the CFO to speak to the financial specific questions that the chairperson has asked, and then we can see if there's any gaps in our questions and come.
Thank you, CEO. Good day to the chair and honorable members. I'm going to try to answer some of the financial questions and assist the members. One of the questions that we had was regarding the depreciation. If we go and see the financial and the note on page 77, employee-related costs, note 11 speaks to the employee-related costs. However, there's no this note for the depreciation and amortization for 3.2 million. It's actually should have the number 2 should have been written there, because if we go to the notes to our financials on page 93, I'll try to explain how that number is derived. So somewhere in the middle you'll see 2016 and you'll see depreciation, and then it's listed by category of items, PPE. It's the fourth column, depreciation, and the total is 2.8 million. We then move on to page 94, and also in the middle there you'll see reconciliation of intangible assets, so that's the amortization, and there's also, it's the third column, amortization of 395,000. So if we add the 395 and the 2832, it comes to about the 3.227 million rands. So perhaps in the future we'll just make it a little bit more clearer on how the depreciation number is derived. There was a question in terms of the bank overdraft. I'll leave it to my colleague who was standing in as the acting CFO to advise on that question.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the members again. I would approach the questions in sequential order as they were asked, relating to the finances. The first one that related to the finance was why there is no budget for BDM tender facilitation indicated. The money that was used for the 676,000 for the tender facilitation was from the previous year's cumulative reserve. So there wasn't any budget allocation for the 20.
Sorry. Can I just repeat? The question was on why there is no budget for the BDM tender facilitation for the amount of 676,000. So the spending was actually from the cumulative funds of previous financial years. So there wasn't any budget allocation for 2015-16 for that expenditure. And the other question related to surplus funds on USAF, and why the comment there is mainly attributable to unspent BDM funds while there are other areas that had unspent funds. For the BDM STB subsidies, the unspent funds, there was the highest amount of 8.5 million. And when we go to the fifth line that talks about the project cost of 2.7 million, and the, which is the budget compared to the spending of 1.6 million, those project costs are mainly related to the expenditure facilitating for the project rollout, which would be transportation, basically traveling costs supporting each and every project. And why there was also far less spending relating to that budget was because of our BDM project only actively being rolled out in the fourth quarter. So the underspending there is 1.1 million. So when we get to combine the 8.5 and the 1.1, basically on the BDM there is high unspent funds. The other areas, broadband, rapid deployment, and basically the broadband and rapid deployment. Broadband had unspent funds of 4 million and rapid of 3.6 million. But I should also admit that we should have more, at least have broken down the areas of underspending rather than highlighting one area. The other question was on the law followed for inter-entity loans and what these inter-entity loans are. These inter-entity loans are actually errors on payments. We have two separate accounts, the USASA account, bank account, and the USAF bank account. So it does happen that if maybe the description on the payment document is not written correctly, then therefore the payment will come out of the incorrect bank account. But we...
Please slow down.
Okay.
Explain properly.
Yes. I was indicating that there are instances where the document is not indicated correctly. The service provider for which entity the payment has to go out of, the payment is likely to come out of the incorrect bank account. But as we pick this up, the following month, the correction would be made. So it does happen that if such a payment, especially when we do month-end payments, as we know that the financial year end is also the end of the month, if we get to pick the error would get corrected in the following months.
But why is it written loan?
It's basically the account from which the payment got to be paid out of. We are indicating that the other entity owes the in this case, can I just, is it for yourself in the case of the 26 million of 26,000 or the 26,000 of USASA, it basically would mean that the payment was meant for USASA, but it was paid out of USAF. So it means USAF would owe USASA that money because it wasn't supposed to be paid out of that account.
Not answering my question. Why is it referred as a loan? Why is not referred as an error that is to be corrected? You have where you reflect errors and correction of statements. Why is it not? Because there is no law that allows you to do inter-entity loans.
For
PFMA does not allow you, ECA does not allow you. That's why I asked that question. Because if you reflect it in your statements, in your financial statement, and you say this is a loan, I expect a loan to have conditions. I expect a loan to be said that I borrowed from this for a particular reason. Now this is not borrowing. This is an error in terms of payment, which one means there's incompetence in terms of financial people who are paying, because if I know that there's no invoice that corresponds with this what is it? You issue something before you get an invoice. You issue an order, for example, in terms of finances. You'd issue an order. You know there's a service provider that has provided this service that we need to pay this amount. There is something that you either in other departments is an entry, others is an order, others it's something else. They call it different names. Now, you would know that when an invoice comes, I must find something that corresponds to that invoice. Otherwise, you can end up paying people that you're not supposed to be paying. Now, firstly, it should have been picked up then before payment. One, it's not picked up. And I'm raising this because I'm picking up this because this is the problem with USAS and USAF, where you find that there is no declaration or there's no separation in terms of which money goes where. And I'll come because even the audit chair raises it in the report. I'm raising it this sharply because I don't think it's just an issue of error. It's a flaw in the system that makes it clear. Because if it's an error, by month end, by the following month you correct. If it's an error of the previous year, audit allows you. Even Auditor General would say the reinstatement of financial statements has been done because you have picked up an error, you have corrected an error to say we are reinstating the financials. That is allowed even if the financial year end has come to an end for you to reinstate. Now, I want to understand why are we coining it a loan when it's not a loan? Because you are reflecting it under your financial statements as a loan in terms of inter-entities. And by law, you are not allowed to.
Thank you, Chair. Just to elaborate, maybe the disclosure in terms of it being called a loan, it might be misleading, but the transaction itself, as much as it's erroneously made, it's either a debt to another company or it is receivable from another company. So in terms of classification of that particular transaction, it's either a debt or a receivable. That's why in the financial statements, that particular debt, I will avoid the use of loan. That particular debt will appear in another entity as the amount of money that should come through to that company, meaning a receivable from another company.
If I may try to zoom in on some of the issues that we are confronted with, I think it's symptomatic of the current environment that we found ourselves in, wherein you found that the finance department was, particularly towards the end of the financial year, was only manned by one person. So when you're actually posting entries and also reviewing the work, you are prone to make such errors. Because we lost the CFO, I think, around about October or September, the 2015, and we lost the senior manager who was acting as the CFO. So Mohobo then had to be brought up to speed to actually move from being an accountant to act as a CFO. Obviously, you also had the PFMA deadlines that could not be moved in terms of financial statements. So there was a serious control breakdown towards the end of the financial year, which we are obviously fixing as we're going forward with the appointment of the CFO, and we obviously have to progress with the key positions in terms of the finance division.
Chair, if I may also try to assist my colleagues here in terms of this 26,000 rands. These financial statements are prepared according to GRAP. That's the standard that it's prepared according to. And according to GRAP now, when one entity has paid, either erroneously or per an agreement, an amount which should have been paid by the other entity, then it would be raised then, as an amount which is owing. And if I can just show the committee members that on one side you will see the debit and on the other side you will see the credit on this item here, particular item. If we were to refer to page 94, which is the notes to the USAF the USASA financials. Under loans and receivables, you will see it, the 26,000 rands in the 2015, which is what we're talking about. And then if we refer on the USAF financials, on their balance sheet, on the inter-entity loans, somewhere around in the middle, current liabilities now, on the USAF, the other entity, there's the note 8, the 26,000 rand. So it balances on both sides of the book. But one thing, it's clear that in terms of we have to strengthen our month-end close-off procedures to ensure that at month-end we've already identified these errors. We've corrected it in the month that in which it appeared, so past the necessary journal entries, so that it then nets off and comes to zero at the month end. So those are the type of procedures that during the course of my tenure that I will be implementing and ensuring that we don't have a repetition going forward. Thank you.
On the last question of the bank overdraft, question being what the overdraft was for and if the overdraft is cleared, as indicated by our bank chairperson, we had challenges at year end in terms of two of the three signatories had left the organization, and we basic challenges were there were how the payments are done and how the transfers, because we also have the call account related to linked to the check accounts. So at a particular time at year end, we had challenges of the bank system transferring the funds from the call account into the check account. So in this instance, one of the debit orders went through at year end without having enough funds into the check account. And it resulted in an overdraft that is disclosed in the financials. But the overdraft of this, of the one that is disclosed, was cleared off. And now we got to also rectify that challenge of bank signatories, so we are able to transact as we should currently.
Something there on the follow-up. When you say in the bank signatories, you mean in the people who resigned?
Yes, ma'am.
Like your CFO and your CEO.
Senior manager.
And those didn't give notice, board chairperson? For their departure. For example, I would understand the CEO's term of contract was very clear, is ending end of March, so we knew that he's going.
Thanks, Chair. What actually happened with the CEO, he got ill a month before the termination of his contract, and that created, in fact, it was like 6 weeks, and it created a void. We thought he was going to come back to work, and then on my interactions with him, because initially we did not even have the sick note, so we're concerned, and we actually got to know that he was ill, so serious, on a serious level when I spoke to him, and then we subsequently got a sick note. That's when then we actually appointed somebody to act, but the bank processes in terms of, because we didn't want to change the signature and then he comes back, so we're not sure, so we had to wait for him, because it was like he's going to be under treatment and if he improves he comes back, but it ended up being 6 weeks, and during that time the sort of executive operations was acting, and we couldn't actually change the signatures. We only decided to do that at the end of the month. And then it took a process of like a month for the whole, because it was not only, it involved also the acting CFO and so on. It was a whole process. And in a way, it actually dilapidated our delivery. I would like the CEO to also cover the issue of branding that was asked by Honorable Sotheze.
Thanks. Just to again say to Chairperson, when I came in, I had to admit to the board that we need to improve the financial management situation. It was not ideal. And I must thank the ministry because they assisted us to try and resolve that as fast as we could, because clearly had we continued with that gap, it could have not assisted us going forward. But now I'm happy that we have those stabilities and we're going to focus on improving on all these internal controls and get things right. In terms of the brand specialist, it's a full-time person who was recruited. I'm not sure they wanted her name specifically, but it is Biskitu Matlhatsi. Lahatsi, yes. We have already have deliverables in that regard that we are submitting to the board in terms of policy strategies and really focusing on brand improvement, stakeholder management. As you heard from the chair's report, that we're actually having a very improved working relationship with our key strategic stakeholders, that they even participated in our strategic sessions. So we are on the right path. It's just that, of course, we just need to clean up all what needs to be cleaned to get things to the expectation that we all want. Chair, I think that covers all the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I just got a note that the lunch outside, somebody is literally sitting and guarding it. Can I ask we break and then we come back for the next round? Unfortunately, we're going to have to break for about 30 minutes until, if my watch is correct, it's 12:45, we come back 1:15. And then we proceed with the second round.
I'm going to